hiatus, for those of you that didn't know that. And the Guy James Show is proudly part of the Head On Radio Network. And as always, I do want to remind you, it's a listener-supported program. We hope you'll help out. And remember this, you've heard from the radical right.
This is the Quality News Network. At the United Nations, the U.S. introduced a new draft resolution of sanctions against North Korea for its reported nuclear test Monday. The U.S. wants the Security Council to vote on the resolution tomorrow. However, Russia is urging the U.S. not to rush and to wait for diplomacy. The United States has softened its proposal, dropping a requirement for inspection of all cargo entering and leaving North Korea. However, China is opposed to a travel ban or financial sanctions. In Washington today, a special envoy from China met with President Bush, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and the White House National Security Advisor to discuss North Korea. On Capitol Hill today, the House Ethics Committee heard from witnesses called to testify in the Mark Foley page scandal. His former chief of staff testified behind closed doors, reportedly that he had been given information, gave information to House Speaker Dennis Hassert's chief of staff at least 3 years ago. In Baghdad today, a Sunni television station was stormed by gunmen who killed 11 people. It was the second television station attacked in a month in Baghdad. At least 33 people died in violent attacks around the capital. In eastern Afghanistan, a suicide bomber attacked a vehicle carrying Afghan soldiers, injuring 16. Also, three civilians were wounded when a car bomb that targeted a U.S. patrol went off. ABC News reports that the British terror cell that was allegedly plotting to blow up transatlantic flights raised money through eBay. According to intelligence reports, at least one suspect financed the operation by buying and selling items on the Internet auction site. At Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, earlier this week, the International Red Cross met for the first time with 14 suspected al-Qaeda operatives being held at the U.S. prison. The high-value detainees were recently transferred there from secret CIA prisons. In New York, investigators are going through the debris left from yesterday's small plane crash into a high-rise condo that killed New York Yankees pitcher Corey Lytle and his flight instructor. In Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania, the one-room Amish schoolhouse that was the site of a fatal shooting earlier this month has been demolished. It will be replaced with a green pasture. A Turkish novelist has won the Nobel Prize in Literature. His work dealt with the symbols of clashing cultures. And in Rancho Mirage, California, former President Gerald Ford has been hospitalized. His office says it is for medical tests. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
A Chinese official says China may someday take passengers into space. China sent two men into orbit last year and has plans for a mission to the moon next year and a spacewalk by 2008. The latest Federal Reserve Beige Book survey of current economic conditions finds that economic activity continues to expand in general. However, the once-hot housing market is cooling. Mortgage rates increased the past week, according to Freddie Mac. The average rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 6.37%. In August, the U.S. trade deficit grew more than expected to an all-time high record. It was nearly $70 billion, mostly due to higher oil prices. The Labor Department reports last week 308,000 unemployment benefit claims were filed. That is about what analysts expected. The FCC is delaying until tomorrow its decision regarding the AT&T merger with Bell South, which was approved yesterday by the Justice Department. Sony announced it is developing a Walkman that can play video to compete with Apple's iPod. Light sweet crude settled at $57.86 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange today. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones surged nearly 100 points and set a new record high of 11,947. Today marks the fifth record close on Wall Street in the past 2 weeks. Once again, the Dow was up 95 points, the Nasdaq up 37, the S&P 500 up 12. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Bramoff.
It's time for another hour of conversation radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce.
Hey, and welcome, welcome, welcome. 6 minutes after the hour, the second hour of the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Many, many thanks to our good friend, Guy James, for having covered hour number one on this Thursday afternoon. And, well, you know, I mean, it's that whole global thing. It's afternoon here, okay? Let's not quibble over the differences. I'm Bob Kincaid. Bruce isn't here. He'll be back, we're anticipating about a week from Monday. Bruce taking some well-deserved time off from the grueling routine of life behind the Electra Voice RE20. Where do we go this afternoon and into the evening? We can go where you want to go. I thought, since it is still fresh, at least in my horrified mind, I thought we might go back to the audio of Dear Leader's Rose Garden appearance yesterday and check out some of the audio on that, because it really does deserve to be heard in its entirety with the occasional interruption from little old yours truly. But if you rely on what passes for journalism in this country, You didn't get in on the joke. You didn't get in on the real deal here. Because this press conference was a matter of sheer horror. Utter and abject horror. Now, in the second hour tonight, somewhere around, quarter after or so, we'll be hearing from David Lindorf of thiscan'tbehappening.net. He's done some fairly extensive writing on what he thinks is from Dr. Strangelove on what's percolating on the threat board in the Persian Gulf. And I think you will find that discussion quite interesting. But for now, I want to start. Okay, here's how it works. We're going to start where I hit the record button. That's just what it is. But we're going to go back to Dear Leader and listen to this raw audio from yesterday's so-called press conference. Let me see here. What's the voice in my ear telling me to say? Yeah, you know, like that. Oh, okay. I got a little map here with all the lapdog Washington Press Corps reporters on it, and I know the hard questions you're going to ask me. You know what I did before we go to that. I got to thinking. You know, a question I'd like to hear someone ask George Bush someday. I'd like to hear someone someday ask George Bush the simple question, sir. I know it hangs in your throat to refer to him as sir, but we'll do this for the sake of argument. Sir, From time to time, you refer to the Constitution of the United States.
Well, yes, I have. And let me say, that's a lovely suit you're wearing there. You're a pretty man.
Well, sir, you refer to it from time to time. A simple question, sir. Have you ever read it, sir? Have you ever read the Constitution of the United States, sir? Seeing as how all this legislation you're so darn fond of is in abject, stark relief against everything that the Constitution stands for. Sir, have you ever actually read the Constitution?
Pluck.
Exactly. What do you suppose the answer would be? Well, it would be like most of the answers you got in this press conference yesterday. It would be something that had absolutely to do, absolutely nothing to do with the question that was asked.
So I hear the voices, but I'm the decider.
Mm-hmm, yes you are. So we go to the Rose Garden, picture if you will, submitted for your approval. A moron in a Rose Garden answering questions.
The transfer of nuclear weapons or material by North Korea to states or non-state entities would be considered a grave threat to the United States. And we would hold North Korea fully accountable for the consequences of such action. The United States remains committed to diplomacy. And we will continue to protect ourselves and our interests.
Yeah, sure we will. Now, that's not the press conference.
Agnes is a little skippy.
No, well, you know, we're doing an hour that we don't ordinarily do, Agnes. It all is forgiven.
I'm the decider.
Dear God. Yeah, I stopped at this airport in Cleveland, and this guy came to me at the airport, and he says, "You gotta help me find somebody to help me pick onions, pluck them, or whatever you do with them." My God. My God.
That use religion to achieve objectives. And they want...
Okay, I think we've got the file now. Or not quite, but
yes,
some...
Yes.
You know.
Want us to leave, and they want us to, and they want to topple government.
Go.
They want to extend an ideological caliphate that has no concept
Time
of
out.
Liberty.
Pause button. Okay, everybody with a little spare money, the bet on this one. You know that straightforward question I wanted to ask George Bush a minute, sir. Have you ever actually read the Constitution? How about another simple question, sir? What's a caliphate? No. You define it for us. We're ignorant, and you like to lecture to us like we're dumber than a dumber than a sack of stumps. What's a caliphate, Mr. Bush?
Well, I think it's like a dashiki.
God, go on, Agnes.
Inherent in their beliefs, they want to control oil resources. And they want to plot and plan and attack us again. That's their objectives. And so, and our strategic objective is to prevent them from doing that. And we're constantly changing tactics.
Now, wait. Do you realize that he just said that our strategic objective is just the exact opposite of their strategic objective, and therefore it's the same? They want to establish a caliphate and control oil supplies and attack us. Well, we are trying to establish American hegemony over the entire world, control oil supplies, and attack them. Right? I mean, we got one side, we got the buffalo, the other side, we got Jefferson's head. Yep, two sides of the same coin. Go on, Agnes.
To achieve that objective, and I appreciate Senator Warner going over there and taking a look. I want you to notice what he did say is, if the plan is now not working... The plan that's in place isn't working. America needs to adjust. I completely agree. That's what I talked to General
Casey
about.
No, you don't. You don't completely agree, George. You have sat there bull-headed, pig-eyed, and jug-eared and told us that we're going to stay on, that we're going to continue doing what you're doing until hell freezes over because anything else is cut and run. Go on, Agnes, please.
I said, General, The Baghdad security plan is in its early implementation. I support you strongly, but if you come into this office and say we need to do something differently, I support you. If you need more troops, I support you. If you're going to devise a new strategy, we're with you, because I trust General Casey to make the judgments necessary to...
Okay, a question. What if General Casey... This is just what if. We know that General Casey would never do anything like this, because General Casey is a toady and a lickspittle, all right, for George Bush. But what if General Casey walked into the Oval Office someday and said, Mr. Commander-in-Chief, sir, it's not working. It's just not working out. We're not going to win here. This thing can't be won. We're not fighting a conventional army. No one's ever going to sign a surrender treaty to us aboard anything. Aboard the back of a camel or the battleship USS Missouri. Nobody's ever going to surrender to us. Therefore, it is impossible that we will ever win this conflict. It's not working. It's time to pull the troops out. We got to go home. I mean, it was real and it was fun, but it wasn't real fun. But we got to go. What do you suppose, just for the sake of argument, what do you suppose George Bush's response would be? Well, the fact that General Casey has never done that tells you a little bit about what George Bush's response would be. George Bush's response would be to do the same thing to General Casey, lickspittle, that he did to General Shinseki, who politely and calmly and rationally and respectfully informed George Bush that if he was hell-bent, and he is hell-bent, on invading Iraq, that if he wasn't hell-bent on invading Iraq, that he would need at least 500,000 American troops. 500,000, that's 500,000. At least. That's the bottom. That's the bottom line number. You know, the more numbers you have, the better off you are, because then you can garrison the country and maybe take care of all the baddies, and then set up a reasonably stable circumstance in which the people can choose their own government with 500,000 people. Well, General Shinseki said all of that to George Bush, and George Bush fired him. Right? Yeah, right. So therefore, General Casey will never tell George Bush it ain't working out. That's the sad fact. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program. I'm Bob Kincaid, sitting in on the Head On Radio Network.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The Millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free. And it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to waterusitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
Stop, drop and roll, and I will tell you where I'm coming from. You've done a lot of yelling, pointing.
Twenty-one and a half minutes after the hour, I'm Bob. This is the Bruce Show. And we're picking up where we left off last night with the audio from yesterday's press conference in which Dear Leader explained, what was the name of that play a few years back? Sister So-and-So, somebody explains it all. Or was it? No, that was a Nickelodeon. He explained it all to us, right? Yeah. To the phones, though, we're joined by Steady calling in. Hey, Steady, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Hi, thank you. Hi to the horn and all the listeners. Agnes, hi. I was listening to your last monologue there in regards to getting out of Iraq, and I've listened to a lot of the positions on from Murtha and various drawdowns and stay the course. And you know, as I'm listening to your thing, this popped in my head, so this is raw, fresh.
We love it that way, Steady.
Yeah, incorporating many of the things that have been said, and how do we get out of Iraq? I mean, by aggression, we are not going to get, it's going to get worse. We're losing 100 people a day now. And this is my thought. I don't want to scatterbrain here, and then I'll be done, and maybe you can get a take on it. But start assembling here. You know, they're going to have to move all their stuff out. They're building bases there. You know, they have resources there. Start assembling here in the States a crew of something like what used to be the CCC, the Conservation Corps.
Yeah.
And with the intent to go in there and rebuild the place and start teaching some people here who are willing to do that. As the troops stop their aggression, stop using white phosphorus, stop using the depleted uranium munitions, and draw down outside into regions where there is no population and start bringing in some of these crews that are building the U.S. military bases for permanent purposes to start rebuilding some of the areas and restoring water and power and fuel and heating oil and everything that they need to, you know, for basics, food, clothing, shelter. It's really...
I think that, Steady, I got to tell you, I think that would be noble on our part. I also don't think it's, no offense, going to happen.
Right.
I think when it comes to the actual rebuilding of Iraq, the only thing the United States can do is what it ought to do, and that is to follow Colin Powell's so-called pottery barn rule, i.e. you broke it, you bought it. And let the rest of the world, and I know this would drive the neocons just absolutely crazy, but let the rest of the world do the rebuilding. Let the Iraqis do the rebuilding, and the only involvement the United States has with it is to write the check.
Yeah, I'm game for that. That sounds great. Bechtel, time for you to go.
Yeah, sorry, Halliburton, you can't be part of it either. No Kellogg, Brown, and Root.
No, all of you guys, just pack it up. You guys go find, put your resumes up on monster.com and hope for the best. Your $10,000 nights in Kempinski hotels while our troops are staying in tents are over. And as far as this is the very seed going into the ground here, people really, really, really want to make a difference, go get some language CDs and learn Arabic. Be able to...
Well, yeah, and as long as they're not gay.
Well, you know, hey, no problem there. You do what you want there. The Muslims will identify you as whatever they want, but if you have made the initiative to learn their language and come over there with an intention to help them redo and represent the United States and its great historic tradition as far as, you know, justice and liberty for all.
Yeah.
An agreement on...
I was being a little bit flippant because, after all, the United States military fired its single best Arabic translator. I mean, the number one guy, because the military didn't like how he had sex.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, tell me military intelligence involved with that.
Well, at this point, that seems to be an oxymoron.
Yes, it does.
Bob, I this stuff's going to keep coming to me, and as it unfolds, I want to get out to the world, say to the world that there are a huge amount of people in the United States that do not are not represented by Bush, and we want Bush to go. And I'm going to try to do my best here to start that amongst the grassroots. We got to care for the people over there. This is a disaster. And our troops are coming home, the IVAW. These people are PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorders.
Yeah.
And no one is dealing with this. The Bush administration's cutting their veterans while they're making veterans. And they're trying to recruit our kids off the high school. And this has got to stop. It's just too much.
Well, you know, part of that study is informing American moms and dads. Because the way the stupid stinking law is written, if you don't want your children preyed upon by military recruiters who don't care whether those children live or die as long as they meet their recruiting quota, they're monsters. These recruiting people, you understand? They're the worst kind of con artists and killers. Then you actually, and oddly enough, it's not in the Patriot Act. This doesn't come from the Patriot Act. This is something that was just quietly slipped in the middle of the night into No Child's Behind Left, you know, the Education Act.
Yeah, it's been said left behind what?
Yeah, right. exactly. But no, it's in there. If you don't want the military to prey upon your children, you have to affirmatively send written notice to the high school telling them not to give out the child's personal information to the military, because the default status on that issue is that every kid's name, every kid's phone number goes to the military so that they can prey on them and try to send them to Iraq where they can get really good and dead. Now, I mean, think about that. I mean, you know, you've got a kid who's a sophomore in high school, and if he's a boy, you know, you're worrying about keeping him in shoes because at that point in time he's probably, you know, from ninth grade to tenth grade, maybe he's gone from a size 11 to a size 13. So, you know, there's shoes to be bought and there's clothes to keep him in. Maybe he's playing football or baseball or he's in the band,
right?
and he's, you know, he's growing like a weed. He's eating like a horse. He's having a hard time in math, maybe, or maybe it's not so much in Spanish. And there's all these things to worry about, and there's zits and pimples and there's dating, and do I, can I call her mom, dad, should I call her?
all of this is going on in that child's mind, and somewhere off a few miles away in a military recruiting office, there's a guy chuckling to himself saying, I'm going to get that kid. That kid's going to look good on my recruiting quota. And so moms and dads who are worrying about all those things, Steady, all those things, moms and dads on top of it, have to be informed by, you know, and it's up to us. It's up to people like us to let moms and dads know that the other thing that they have to do is to write a note and send it to the school principal and explain to them that no recruiter is to ever get any personal information about their child because they actually, you know, have worked hard to raise a decent human being and they love that child. And then if the it's in the parents' hands, and if some filthy recruiter calls your kid, then if you've done your part and you've given the written notice, then it's you can give them both barrels over the phone, and you can tell them where to go and how to get off and what to do when they get there.
Bob, soccer moms, SUV dads, grandparents, please take note. Keep tuning into the horn, and I can't add to that. Thanks a million, Bob.
Thank you, Steady. You have a good afternoon, all right?
You do the same.
Bye now.
Right on.
I'm glad Steady brought that up, because we talk about what we can do to affect change. That's a very small but very significant thing right there, what I just laid out, because, yeah, I'm trying to lay out, you know, we've got a teenager. Granted, she's done with high school now. This is the interesting thing. We opted her out of military recruiting. It didn't slow those piranha down one bit. But you have to at least try. And I'm sure that the Department of Homeland Security has been informed that Mr. and Mrs. Kincaid are not patriotic because we didn't want our little blonde-haired, blue-eyed beauty, our precious daughter. We didn't think that she'd look so good in field gray or the chocolate chippies or, you know, whatever the little costumes are that they're wearing in those stinking sands. And we didn't want all of our hard work in raising up a pretty decent human being gone to waste by turning her into a killer. Now, you don't like the fact that I just referred to it as being turned into a killer? That's not my fault. I'm going on what I've been told by other people. You know, the Marine recruiter who once looked at me and said, you know, that's the thing. If you want to be a Green Beret, you know, you got to be able to do this and have that and have this much on the Armed Forces Service Aptitude Battery. And you got to blah, blah, blah. If you want to be a SEAL or you want to be a Roger Ramjet or whatever they call the special forces in the Air Force, it's all complicated. And he looked at me and he said, in the Corps we have a saying, any mother's son will do. We can turn anyone into a killer. Now, I know, Lord God, I know there are American men and women, about 141,000 of them, in those stupid, stinking sands in Iraq, in the middle of that bush meat grinder. And they're decent human beings, and they are good human beings, and they are being called upon to do impossible deeds. And they shouldn't be there. They signed on to defend their country, and instead they're following an order to go into a country and make war on it when that country never did a blessed thing to us. Not one. I understand all of that. But it begins and ends with the recruiters whose only goal is to put another warm body in another slot. And we go back to the story I had last night. According to statistics obtained by the Associated Press, 3.8% of the first-time recruits scored below certain aptitude levels. In previous years, the Army had allowed only 2% of its recruits to have low aptitude scores.
That limit was increased last year to 4%, the maximum allowed by the Defense Department, and that number will be changed as it becomes more and more difficult to get the good kids into, you know, the kids they really want, the smart kids, the ones that pull 88 and 89 and 90 and 95 and 99 on the AFSAB. It gets more difficult to get those kids into the meat grinder. About 17% of the first-time recruits, about 13,600 souls, were accepted under waivers for various medical, moral, or criminal problems, including misdemeanor arrest for drunk driving. That is a slight increase from last year, the Army says. It's only a slight increase. Of those accepted under waivers, more than half of them were for moral reasons, mostly misdemeanor arrests. 38% were for medical reasons, 7% with drug and alcohol problems, including those who may have failed a drug test or acknowledged they had used drugs. See, the whole, if George, and we'll be talking about it, like I said, in the next hour, if George gets away with making war against Iran, whether he intends to put boots on the ground there or not, sooner or later he probably will have to. And then, sunshine, we get a draft. And what you're seeing there with these waivers, you're going to see in no long, you know, if you walk into the recruiter's office drunker than Adam's off ox, and enough THC in your urine to, well, that's not going to work anymore, because you know what? The Army is now saying, don't matter to us. How many impaired people have they taken? How many stories have there been of that? Lots. The Army said the waiver process recognizes that people can overcome past mistakes and become law-abiding citizens. Wow. Alice's restaurant is coming back to haunt us. Remember that part where he says... And the sergeant said, kid, have you ever, and lists off all the, and eventually Arlo Guthrie looks at him and says, you know, you got a lot of nerve asking me if I'm moral enough to join the Army and kill people after I've been convicted of littering. That's where we are. Dig that. The Army said the waiver process recognizes that people can overcome past mistakes and become law-abiding citizens who go to Iraq and shoot people. What's that sign outside one of the fire at the door to one of the fire bases? Be courteous, be professional, have a plan to kill everyone you meet. Of course, that's how it is in Iraq. That's the only way to operate there, because there's no clearly defined mission. There's no reason to be there. It is strictly the Old West in the Old East. Kill or be killed. That's where it is, isn't it? Let's go back to Dear Leader now. We were having so much fun with him. Where were we, Agnes?
Put the tactics in place to help us achieve an objective. And I appreciate Jimmy Baker's willingness to... he and Lee Hamilton are putting this. They got a group they put together that I think it was Congressman Wolf's suggestion or passed into law. We supported the idea. I think it's good to have some of our elder statesmen. I hate to call Baker an elder statesman, but to go over there and take a look.
Because he'll kick my butt.
And to come back and make recommendations. Somebody said, he said, well, you know, cut and run in, working. That's not our policy.
Pause, please. Cut and run isn't working. That's not our policy. The hell's he trying to say? Please, somebody, help me. Cut and run isn't working. Huh? Nobody is... Go on.
Our policy is to help this country succeed, because I understand the stakes. And I'm going to repeat them one more time. As a matter of fact, I'm going to spend a lot of time repeating the stakes.
You do that, George.
About what life is like in the Middle East.
Yeah, because you've been there so much.
It is conceivable that there will be a world in which radical forms, extreme forms of religion, fight each other for influence in the Middle East.
Conceivable. It's happening.
In which they got the capacity to use oil as an economic weapon.
Yeah.
And when you throw in that mix, a nuclear weapon
mm-hmm.
in the hands of a sworn enemy of the United States.
In the Middle East.
You begin to see an environment
uh-huh.
that would cause some later on in history to look back and say, how come they couldn't see the problem? What happened to them in the year 2006?
What is history going to say? How come we couldn't see the problem? How come the American people couldn't see that the problem was entirely and solely the fact that there's a madman in the White House? This business about, you know, someone with a nuclear weapon. There's only one country in the Middle East that has nuclear weapons. Class. That's right. Israel. That's the only country in the Middle East that has any kind of a nuclear device. Iran does not have one. Iraq never had one. They didn't have a nuclear weapons program. They didn't have nuclear weapons program related activities. They didn't have nuclear weapons program related activities, birthday parties. Nothing. Nada. Niente. Bupkis. Nothing. No nukes. So, Agnes, roll on.
Why weren't they able to see the problems now and deal with them before it came too late, Steve? And so Iraq is an important part of dealing with this problem. And my vow to the American people is I understand the stakes and I understand what it would mean for us to leave before the job is done. And I look forward to listening to what Jimmy Baker and Lee Hamilton say about how to get the job done. I appreciate them working on this issue.
Uh-huh.
Because I think they understand what I know, and the stakes are high.
They do understand what you know, George. They understand what you know. They understand that what you know, I mean, you know, you can put in a thimble and have room left for coffee. Lord, Lord, Lord. Let's take a moment. Take a quick break. Come back. We'll listen to some more Dear Leader. This could be a very interesting evening. This is the Bruce Birch radio program on the Head On Radio Network. Sitting in, I'm Bob Kincaid.
What's Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is Head On with Bob Kincaid.
The only hope that George Bush had after he raped the Treasury, after he ripped us off, the only hope he had for balancing out the amount of the bad paper that he had to go and hang in China was to take control of the means by which China would receive oil. Iraq is one of the faucets. The other faucet is Iran. If he can control those two things, he can continue to hang bad paper on China, and on the other end act as the dealer outside the schoolyard to China's little junkie. Does this make sense?
It makes perfect sense, but I haven't heard it said in that concise a manner. Nobody has made the loop so small that everybody can realize.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern, only at headonradionetwork.com and radiopower.org.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
A mí no me ocurrirá.
私には起きないわ。
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's 1 in 6 people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Piece of rock and roll today as it was the day that it was first pressed onto wax. 13 minutes before the hour, this is the Bruce Birch radio program. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm going through all of this audio from Dear Leader for a reason. You know, as Vince Ricardo says in my favorite comedy from the 1970s, The In-Laws, I don't just do things. So we go back to Dear Leader and let him prattle on for a minute or two more.
Developing a Palestinian state so that Israel can live at peace.
Now, wait.
And the stakes are high when it comes to making sure...
We're going to develop a Palestinian state so Israel can live at peace. Did you catch that? The only... And really, I mean, that it's, you know, it's not the law of unintended consequences. It's just a fact. When George Bush thinks about the Palestinian question... When he thinks about the rotten hell that the Palestinian people live in, when and if he actually thinks about a solution to that problem, he's not thinking about Palestinian people. He's not, you know, we're going to bring freedom to the Iraqi people. Never, not once in his miserable existence has George Bush ever thought about bringing freedom to the Palestinian people. Not once. And you heard it in that, you heard it in that one little moment. And we're going to solve the Palestinian problem so Israel can live in peace. Right. Okay, go ahead, Agnes.
The young democracy of Lebanon is able to fend off the extremists and radicals that want to crater that democracy. This is a real challenge of the 21st century. I like to tell people we're in an ideological struggle. And it's a struggle between extremists and radicals and people of moderation. Who want to simply live a peaceful life.
Mm-hmm.
And the calling of this country
yeah.
and in this century is whether or not we will help. the forces of moderation prevail? That's the fundamental question.
And right now the answer is no.
Facing the United States of America beyond my presidency. And you can tell I made my choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I made my choice because the most solemn duty of the American president and government is to protect this country.
Yeah, he said duty.
Martha, yes, I'm sure it was a profound follow-up. Okay.
Can we go back to North Korea, Mr.
Please.
President? You talk about failures of the past administration with the policy towards North Korea. Again, how can you say your policy is more successful, given that North Korea has apparently tested a nuclear weapon? And also, if you would mind, what is the red line for North Korea, given what has happened over the past few months?
Yeah. My point was bilateral negotiations didn't work. You know, I appreciate the efforts of previous administrations.
Oh, stop it just a bit.
It just didn't work.
It didn't. When did North Korea go back to the business of developing a nuclear weapon? Anybody? When? Was it sometime after Dear Leader called them part of the axle of evil? The tricycle of evil? Wasn't that it? Wasn't that when they busted the seals off of everything and said, whoa, wait a minute, no, you're acting like you want to shoot us and kill a bunch of people. We better develop something with which we can defend ourselves. Wasn't that when it was? All the Clinton years of containment and delicate, super delicate negotiations with a regime that is not known for its stability or its sensibility, a regime with which we do not have a peace treaty. Many people forget that. It's only a ceasefire. It's a ceasefire that's arguably lasted for a few decades now. But, you know, delicately, you know, trying not to isolate them from the world, trying not to make them a complete pariah, making sure that there's a little bit of food for them to eat and some fuel oil so that the peasants won't freeze to death in the brutal, brutal Korean Peninsular winter. And President Dum Dum has the nerve to stand up there and say that policy failed because after he came into office, they developed a nuclear weapon? You don't buy that. I don't buy that. Keep going, Agnes.
And therefore, I thought it was important to change how we approach the problem so that we could solve it diplomatically.
Oh.
And I firmly believe that with North Korea and with Iran, that it is best to deal with these regimes with more than one voice. Because I understand how it works. What ends up happening is that, you know, we say to a country such as North Korea, here's a reasonable way forward. They try to extract more at the negotiating table, or they've got a different
more
objective.
What? More food?
And then they go and say, wait a minute, the United States is being unreasonable. They make a threat. They could, you know, they say the world is about to fall apart because of the United States' problem. And all of a sudden, we become the issue. But the United States' message to North Korea and Iran and the people in both countries is that we want to solve issues peacefully.
Uh-huh.
We say there's a better way forward for you. Here's a chance, for example, to help your country economically.
Really?
And all you got to do is verifiably show that you're...
George, back when I was a kid, I would do something, and I'd go and I'd try to explain it to my mom or my dad, and I'd sit there just talking a blue streak, and after they had let me babble on for a little bit, see what they started? That's how we got here. They let me babble on. Babble on. After a while, they'd stop me and they'd say, son, I'm sorry, I can't hear you because your actions are speaking more loudly than your words are. And you see, that's where George Bush is. See, we can make things better for you with economic development. If I'm Iran and I'm North Korea, I'm going to look over at the economic opportunities we've made for the people of Iraq who didn't have a nuclear weapon, and I am going to go as fast as I possibly can to get me a nuclear weapon, because it's the only surefire way to make sure that George Bush doesn't bring you any of his peace and prosperity that cost the lives of about 650 civilians over the course of 3 years. Or is that just me? Maybe it is. Maybe I'm just nuts. But a little more.
In this case, that you've suspended your weapons program. And in North Korea's case, that you've got international safeguards on your program, which they agreed to, by the way. And so my point is that to the American people, I said, look, we want to solve this diplomatically. It's important for the president to say to the American people, diplomacy was what is our first choice. And that
funny, he told us the same thing about Iraq, didn't he?
And I think it is a hopeful sign that China is now an integral partner in helping North Korea understand that it's just not the United States speaking to them. And it's an important sign to North Korea that South Korea, a country which obviously is deeply concerned about North Korean activities, South Korea is a partner, and that if North Korea decides that they don't like what's being said, they're not just stiff in the United States. I don't know if that's a diplomatic word or not.
No, George, it's not.
But they're sending a message to countries in the neighborhood that they really don't care what other countries think, which leads to further isolation.
You know what this boils down to? This boils down to the fact that George Bush knows that he is a paper tiger. He knows that he can't offer any sort of meaningful coercion to the North Koreans or the Iranians. He's got to have China backing him up with North Korea, because North Korea knows that, that we simply do not have the military ability right now to do anything about their situation. And they can sit there, and they can. How sickening is that? He refers to North Korea as somebody who's going to stiff us, like there's some what underling. No, what North Korea is able to do with us is go, what are you going to do about it, George? Because George can't do anything about it. And so all that business about, well, you know, we're doing everything we're doing to make sure that you're more secure now, so that you can be, because we're keeping you safe, because we're Republicans. Republicans keep you safe. Republicans don't keep you safe. They never have, they never will. Republicans keep Republicans safe. Whether it's their corporate cronies on the in the boardrooms here at home, or Bechtel and Kellogg burning loot and Halliburton abroad, Republicans watch other Republicans' backs. There's the Republican Party has no flag. The Republican Party has no nation. All they have are other Republicans. So we will wrap up this hour of the Bruce Birch radio program on that note, and we will continue in this vein when we crank up the first hour of Head On. Glad to have been here for Bruce Birch. I'm Bob Kincaid.
What's the time I'll always remember? I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. When the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution. talk of solidarity and refuse to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the swung open, mothers hugged their son.
This is the Quality News Network. At the United Nations, the U.S. introduced a new draft resolution of sanctions against North Korea for its reported nuclear test on Monday. The U.S. has dropped a requirement for inspection of all cargo entering and leaving North Korea, but it does condemn the nuclear test and demands that the North return to six-party talks. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. John Bolton wants the Security Council to vote on the resolution tomorrow, but a quick vote appears unlikely. Both Russia and China are urging the U.S. not to rush and to wait for diplomacy. Bolton said, quote, "We shouldn't allow meetings and more meetings to be an excuse for inaction." In Washington, the House Ethics Committee heard from witnesses today who were called to testify in the Mark Foley Page scandal. His former chief of staff testified that he informed House Speaker Dennis Hastert's chief of staff about Foley's inappropriate behavior at least 3 years ago. Other aides and congressmen are also expected to testify tomorrow and next week. In Iraq, some Sunni politicians say there were not enough votes yesterday to pass a federalism law, as Shiite lawmakers claim. Many Sunnis boycotted the meeting in which the vote was held. One official says there were only 126 lawmakers at the meeting, not the 140 the Shiites reported. Opponents of the law, which sets up autonomous regions of Iraq, say they'll appeal. In Baghdad today, gunmen stormed a Sunni television station and killed 11 people. At least 21 people died in attacks around the capital. In addition, 40 more tortured bodies have been found throughout the city. This month has also been a deadly one for U.S. forces. More than 40 have been killed in Iraq in the first 12 days of October. In London, a British man has pleaded guilty to conspiring to bomb high-profile targets in the U.S. Those plans were thwarted when he was arrested in 2004. In Virginia, former Democrat Governor Mark Warner has announced he will not run for president in 2008. He said he made the decision because of family reasons and that he wants a real life. In New York, investigators are going through the debris from yesterday's plane crash into a high-rise condo. New York Yankees pitcher Corey Lytle and his flight instructor were killed. In Rancho Mirage, California, former President Gerald Ford has been hospitalized, reportedly for medical tests. Ford is 93 years old and has been hospitalized several times this year. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
A comprehensive government study finds that antipsychotic drugs, sometimes taken by Alzheimer's patients, don't help much. It also found that any benefits are canceled out by the frequent and negative side effects. The U.S. trade deficit grew more than expected in August to an all-time high record. It was nearly $70 billion, mostly due to higher oil prices. The Labor Department reports that 308,000 unemployment benefit claims were filed last week. That's about what analysts expected. Freddie Mac reports mortgage rates rose over the past week. The average rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 6.37%.
The Government Accounting Office reports that credit card late fees now average $34, a 40% increase from a decade ago. The agency also finds that companies have done a poor job of explaining late fee policies to their customers. Next month, Coca-Cola will launch a new drink that it says burns calories. The drink, Enviga, contains a green tea extract that, combined with caffeine, speeds up the body's metabolism. Light sweet crude settled at $57.86 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow surged 100 points and set a new record high, closing up 96 points at 11,948. NASDAQ up 37 points at 2346. S&P 500 up 12 points at 1362. You can hear more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Whoa. Howdy. Again. Day late, the dollar short on that one, I guess. The screaming came up about an hour ago. Nonetheless, I'm still Bob. Still sweet, still lovable. Still bigger than Orson Welles with more...
Okay, all right, all right. But no, we're going to pick up where we left off. I want to jump right to it. We got a guest calling in, we hope, here in a little bit. If you want to do some prep work on where we're going with our guest, David Lindorf, you might want to go to thiscan'tbehappening.net. And have a look. Mr. Lindorf has done some pretty astonishing work in the last few years. The case for impeachment not being the least among those efforts. But let's go to the phones right away and talk to David in Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening. I'll make these real quick for your guest.
Okay.
The first thing is that did you see that pilot only had 70 hours?
Yeah. And had only had his license for 6 months.
You know what this has to do with more, Bob? Bob, this has to do with entitlement. And it's a problem that's rampant in America. People think they're entitled to go everywhere and anywhere.
I own an airplane, therefore I can fly the airplane.
Right, then they're in a position of... And what scares me is the instructor actually let him fly that close to the buildings, and he didn't even react. He reacted too late.
Well, you know, now you've been following the news on this, and
a little bit. Yeah,
yeah, that high-rise condominium tower, you know, a pretty tony place. Didn't a bunch of ball players live there?
Was he showing off to do that? I didn't hear about that. A bunch of ball players were living there.
I think some New York Mets lived there. I think some. This is stuff that I've heard, so you know, I have no independent verification on it. The team physician's offices or something, something like that, were in that building.
You know, it's also the award for stupidity of the week because also he has a wife and a kid. I mean, so you wanted to impress somebody. The instructor, you got to put the blame on the instructor and the New York Yankee.
Well, I saw the aircraft, and I am assuming now, David, that there were twin yokes there was a stick for each seat up front there.
Right.
I guess at this point we're still speculating, and we'll only find out when they recover the black box. But they have, or not black box, they don't have black boxes in planes that small, I don't think. But they have found some sort of a microchip hickey.
Right.
And that will probably give some data. And yeah, it turns out that there is a VFR flight corridor as long as the plane stays under 1,100 feet, if I understood correctly, down the east or the Hudson River. My geography's not so hot where that's concerned. But that explains what he was doing there.
You know, we need to start limiting entitlement for everybody that is in power or celebrities or anything like that, because it creates this culture of just thinking you can do anything you want and carefree. Oh, I can go to New York and fly and do barrel runs.
There is a more than compelling case for impeachment of this president, and B, that when you mention, no matter what Nancy Pelosi says right now, that there, you know, this could be a case of Democrats sort of laying in the weeds and, as they've liked to say in the past, keeping their powder dry. And that if impeachment gets any kind of legs, there is a real honest possibility of it happening.
If they see that the public is demanding it, they're politically astute enough to know that they should follow that lead, you know. And also, you know, there is a thought on Nancy Pelosi, which has occurred to me and some other people, is that, you know, if my theory, people always say, well, how can we impeach Bush because then we'll have Cheney? But my argument on that is, you know, twofold. One is impeachment will take at least a year. And if you impeach Bush, you either have the lamest of lame ducks, because Cheney's popularity is down around 18%, I think, and nobody likes him.
No, in the black community, there are yet unborn babies. I mean, he's at like -4, so.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I don't think he would have any clout whatsoever. I don't think his own party would want to be tied to him with a year to go till elections. So he'd be, you know, a completely ineffective president if he were the front man instead of the behind-the-scenes guy. But I also believe that he's so tied into all of this administration's crimes that if Bush goes down, Cheney goes down first.
Well, yeah, you've got to have a twofer. He's got to do the Agnew thing.
Yeah, and he would have to, because he's so clearly the mastermind of a lot of this stuff that once it starts unraveling in impeachment hearings, as I think it would, he'll go down faster than, you know, a speeding bullet.
So do you think that 17%...
But that means that Nancy Pelosi would become president.
Right.
So she may be acting out of a sense of, you know, not wanting to seem overeager, because then people will say, oh, this is all about getting Nancy Pelosi to be president. And so by saying, you know, we're not going to impeach, and having impeachment sort of be over her dead body, she makes it possible to make her president.
Oh my God, that's a level of triangulation that boggles the mind. I used to have to engage in things like, you know, wild games of quarter bounce to get to points like this. But that's the world we live in, David.
It's true.
Let me you know, obviously you didn't engage in writing this book, The Case for Impeachment, as a holistic exercise. You would like for people to purchase it. It's readily available out there, I trust.
It's in every bookstore I've been in.
Wonderful. How long has it been out?
It came out in on June 1st.
Okay. Well, I certainly we'll put a link to it up on our website. And I sincerely appreciate all of your thoughts on this, because I've read things that you've written, I've read things that other people have written, especially about this Persian Gulf scenario, and it takes me places that my own sense of sanity says is impossible to go. But
I hope that your sense of sanity is right, and I hope this is one story where, you know, come election day, people will look at me and point their fingers and say, boy, were you taken for a ride, you sucker, your sources were no good. I would love to have this happen. This is not something I would wish for.
No, nor I. And the question is, ultimately the question lies with the American people, and it's a question of, you know, how gullible are we? You know,
absolutely.
We've seen this rabbit
pretty
pulled
gullible,
out.
Pretty gullible, unfortunately.
Well, that's the way it looks. We've seen this rabbit pulled out of the hat a couple of times before. At some point, is the rabbit going to begin to look familiar, I guess, is the ultimate question.
Yeah. Well, the trouble is, it takes a lot to tell people to, you know, to see their president as a charlatan when the troops are back, you know, in hot battle. And I think people have to realize that the best they can do for those troops is to is to get an opposition party in power and take this guy down because he doesn't have anybody's best interests at heart but his own.
Well, I agree, and if worse comes to worst, like I said, I'll meet you behind the wire.
Okay.
David Lindorf, thank you very kindly.
Thanks a lot.
It's been a pleasure making your acquaintance.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. David Lindorf, author, co-author of The Case for Impeachment, The Legal Argument for Removing President George W. Bush from Office. If you enjoyed the conversation with Mr. Lindorf, go over to thiscan'tbehappening.net. And there's a lot more of his writing available there. Go through the links at our site if you'd like to order the book, The Case for Impeachment. I didn't even get to something that is on here that follows up on our discussion from last night about the Lancet study. And at some point this evening we will hit that. I've run over a little bit, but it's time for the news. When we come back, your phone calls are, like always, man, more than welcome. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
News Network. A United Nations vote on a draft resolution against North Korea for its reported nuclear test may not come until next week. That's because China and Russia are opposed to sanctions outlined in a new U.S. draft resolution that was circulated today. China is opposed to any sanctions, and Russia's U.N. ambassador said the U.S. should give diplomacy more time to work. The new draft drops the requirement that all cargo entering and leaving North Korea be inspected, but it does condemn the nuclear test and demands that the North return to six-party talks. It also demands that Pyongyang not conduct any more tests. On Capitol Hill, the House Ethics Committee is still trying to determine when House leaders became aware of former Representative Mark Foley's inappropriate behavior toward teenage boys. In testimony today, Foley's former chief of staff said he told House Speaker Dennis Hastert's office about the conduct at least 3 years ago, a charge Hastert's chief of staff denies. In Baghdad today, gunmen stormed a Sunni television station and killed 11 people. At least 21 people died in attacks around the capital. Also, 40 more tortured bodies were found throughout the city. More than 40 U.S. soldiers have been killed in Iraq this month. ABC News reports that the British terror cell that was allegedly plotting to blow up transatlantic flights raised money through eBay. Intelligence reports show that at least one suspect financed the operation by buying and selling items on the Internet auction site. In California's Salinas Valley, investigators are closing in on the source of the recent deadly E. coli outbreak. They say the bacteria was found in cattle fecal samples, but they also say the cattle are not the definite cause of the outbreak. In Virginia, former Democrat Governor Mark Warner has announced he will not run for president in 2008. He said he made the decision because of family reasons and that he wants a real life. In Rancho Mirage, California, former President Gerald Ford has been hospitalized, reportedly for medical tests. In Pennsylvania, the Amish schoolhouse that was the site of a fatal shooting earlier this month has been demolished. It will be replaced with a green pasture. And in New York, investigators are going through the debris from yesterday's plane crash into a high-rise condo. New York Yankees pitcher Corey Lytle and his flight instructor were killed. It's not yet been determined who was piloting the plane. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office.
Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
A new species of mouse has been discovered on the island nation of Cyprus. It's the first new terrestrial mammal species discovered in Europe in decades. It has a bigger head, eyes, ears, and teeth than other European mice. The U.S. trade deficit grew more than expected in August to an all-time high. It was nearly $70 billion, mostly due to higher oil prices. The Government Accounting Office reports that credit card late fees now average $34. That's a 40% increase from a decade ago. The FCC is delaying its decision regarding the $78.5 billion proposed merger between AT&T and Bell South until tomorrow. Next month, Coca-Cola will launch a new drink that it says burns calories. The drink, Enviga, contains a green tea extract that, combined with caffeine, speeds up the body's metabolism. A new 4-gigabyte iPod Nano is being endorsed by Bono and Oprah. $10 of the $199 product will be donated toward helping HIV and AIDS patients in Africa. China's labor body is working to unionize workers at Kodak and Dell. That follows a successful campaign to organize employees at the 62 Walmart outlets in China. Light Sweet crude settled at $57.86 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 96 points at 11,948. NASDAQ up 37, S&P 500 up 12. There's more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
We're a little bit late getting started on hour number two or three, depending on how you're counting things this evening. But I'm Bob Kincaid, nonetheless. It's 13 minutes after the hour, and I'm sorry, we had some technical difficulties during the interview with David Lindorf, but please be advised that interview will be available at the archive sometime after the whole show ends this evening. What a fascinating conversation it was, and I hope you'll check it out, because this is not conspiracy theory stuff. This is the extrapolation of rational fact. And the facts are terrifying. I'm using words that David Lindorf used. These treasonous, crazy, stupid people are on the verge of trying to figure out how to tear the entire world to pieces. I mean, we're talking about global collapse here. I mean, we're talking about ugliness that extends around the globe. We're talking, there are things, the starting a war with Iran would take us to places that we can't even contemplate.
You've got a collapse of confidence in the currency. People are going to panic.
Yeah.
There's going to be gold riots, atonal music, right. Political chaos, right. Mass suicide, right?
Yeah.
It's Germany before Hitler. Uh-huh. You can see that.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen when a six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,400. Jeez. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by Richard calling in. Richard, thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Glad to be here. That was a great interview with Lindorf. Absolutely fascinating.
What a wonderful mind he has.
By all means. And he's right on target that right now is the most dangerous time, because I think what's going on is the so-called gay Republican scandal with Mark Foley in Washington. Is in a way, it's a trap. Not that there's a whole bunch of validity there in seeking out all the hypocrites, but I think it's also being used as a smokescreen to divert attention away from what else Karl Rove and the Republican Party is up to. And I think there's a real good possibility that you will see something happening in the Middle East for no other reason than to turn out to energize the evangelicals come Election Day. And I think that's already happening. I think there's among the evangelicals, I think you're starting to see, when I read right-wing sites I see all kinds of people starting to talk about the hypocrisy of the left in going after the so-called Velvet Mafia on Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
I also see these people talking about an absolute necessity for cleansing all impurity from the Republican Party. I think what we're going to see is an even less kind, tolerant, and far more vicious religious right as a result of all of this.
You know, I think they're going to a place, Richard, where even the closet won't be safe anymore for Republicans.
I tell you what, it's a closet I wouldn't want to go into even holding hands with the Exorcist.
I know. What you're describing, and I know it, the so-called centrists and moderates out there just, you know, hate this program, hate me. You know, he calls people names. but, you know, the we're talking about a Stalinist purge.
Oh, yeah, we are. What's going on here? Well, a Stalinist purge, I think, is a very good description. The other thing that comes to mind for me is the night of the long night.
Yes.
You know, it's almost, when you look at how much the Republican Party has bashed gays over the years, have invigorated the religious right to turn out come election day, let's go after the gays. That has been a strategy that has come from Karl Rove, and it will continue to come from Karl Rove. And I don't think that for a second that Karl Rove was above using the very same trick on his own party. If there's people within his party he wants to disassociate himself from, well, the question I have is this. It's come out today that no less a figure than Karl Rove forced Foley to run again for Congress.
I saw that, yes.
Isn't that amazing? Why would Karl Rove, who would apparently have some kind of inclination that Foley had been engaged in inappropriate behavior?
Yeah, I don't think you call it, from what we know, it's not even an inclination. It was an open secret. It was, everything short of Mark Foley coming to Congress in his Dorothy dress. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but everybody knew he was gay.
Yeah, I understand. And there's a lot of rumors out floating around on the net that you can find, some of them with some credibility, that it goes a lot further than that. For example, Ken Melman, who is the director of the National Republican Party. Last year he was cornered as a fundraiser in Cleveland by a writer for a gay publication and asked about persistent rumors that Melman is gay. And Melman responded by saying, "You have asked a question people shouldn't have to answer." Now, I agree with that position.
Me too.
It's not one. I believe that the religious right, who has been carrying the Grand O Party for the last several years, is one that they would agree with in the slightest.
No, they believe they have a right to know exactly. I mean, and it doesn't, you know, wait, Richard, it doesn't just apply to the homosexual community. It applies to heterosexuals as well. The religious right wants to know exactly what you're doing it, how you're doing it, whether the lights are on or off, clothed, unclothed, toys involved, every candles, what? They want to know it all because they've got a prescription and proscriptions on how America should have sex.
You got it. The standard missionary position, and when you're doing it, mind you, you better have the right beliefs, because more important than anything else to the religious right, to fundamentalists of any stripe of persuasion, the most important thing is the ideology, it's the belief. It's not what you actually do, and this is why we got all this hypocrisy going on right now. We've got a whole bunch of people that think they can go out and spout out sound bites and get results. And you know what? They can. Look, Karl Rove is the person that came up with a mastermind plan to utilize the religious right and the GOP. All right?
And yet at the same time, we now know, as David Lindorf pointed out, and I had sort of on the list for this evening. We now know that at the highest level, they refer to these people as the religious nuts.
The religious nuts.
And there's nothing new in this, Richard, because if you go back to Michael Scanlon's, one of the rare instances in which a Republican was actually forced to take an oath in Congress, if you go back to his testimony before the Congress, he described in the Abramoff scandal the means by which they would manipulate the religious right in these casino scams that Abramoff had become past master at running. And part of his testimony involved, he said, well, you know, then we get on the phone to Ralph Reed, and Ralph Reed gets the religious wackos involved.
Dear Ralph Reed.
Yeah, and that's the word Scanlon, you know, business partner to Jack Abramoff, used: religious wackos. Everybody but the religious right knows that they are being used for well-intentioned fools. They're nothing more than cannon fodder in the culture wars.
You got it. They're some of the biggest patsies ever. And I think they're starting to wake up to that, and I certainly hope that they wake up to it. But the way that I'm afraid they're going to react is by simply becoming more pharisaical than ever before.
They're going to behave like a rabid animal that's put into a corner. I hate to say that because, you know, I grew up a fundamentalist. I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, and some of the finest people I know were people that I grew up with in that circumstance. People that really did live the life, walk the walk, talk the talk, you know, help the poor out there. You know, if somebody died or there was a funeral, you know, the family didn't have to worry about eating or cooking or, you know, reach. I remember as a boy going at the holiday times to the Salvation Army and carrying groceries until my arms felt like lead. Carry all in a church effort to reach out to those who are in need, who are poor, who are suffering, and following the commandments of Christ. I remember every bit of that, Richard, and that's what makes it in a way such a bitter pill to see them taken over and used so brutally, because this is a brutal usage.
It very much is. I agree with you, because also my father was a minister. Both of my grandfathers were ministers, and there's a lot of fine people out there that if they were only had the facts, if they only had a different interpretation, but everything that they hear, they live in an isolated world, and everything that they hear is designed to reinforce the views that they have. And for them, liberals, gays, Al-Qaeda, it's one and the same.
Yeah.
You know? It's like we're terrible people for the things that we're talking about here right now. You know, we're part of this grand conspiracy to bring about Satanism on the earth. It's absurd. And for me, the hypocrisy of it all is summed up in a title I wrote in a piece this past week at Op-Ed News entitled, If God Talks to Bush, Then Why Is Karl Rove an Agnostic? You know?
Yeah.
If Bush is God's right-hand man, then why is God's right-hand man's right-hand man somebody who doesn't even believe in God? It's hypocrisy that truly stinks to hell and back.
Yeah, it does. Do you write frequently at Op-Ed News?
Yeah, I write. I'm a regular there.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, you know, I'm looking. I've got an email right here, right now, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from the American Family Association.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's David Lindorf talking about, you know, the an apocalyptic scenario that almost is straight out of Revelations. And I'm looking at this email from the American Family Association. Subject line: Take a stand for Merry Christmas, not Happy Holidays. What planet do these people live on?
What planet they live on is they believe that Christianity is all about war. There's this idea of dispensationalism that basically we can dispense with the teachings of Jesus. We don't have to carry those out. We don't have to love one another. We don't have to be peacemakers. Forget all that until Jesus comes back, because what Jesus really wants us to do is kick ass.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, the South Park version of Jesus.
The South Park version of Jesus. Go to a church, and which I frequently do. Most churches you will not hear Jesus quoted very frequently.
Mostly it's Paul.
It's Paul, and it's the Old Testament.
Right.
But in terms of Jesus, hey, blessed are the peacemakers, love one another, turn the other cheek. How often do you hear it?
No. It's, come on, y'all, let's make him little children suffer. It's not suffer the little children to come unto me.
Right. It's not do unto the least of them, it's do the least unto them.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you're absolutely right. You hear a bunch of Pauline stuff, and you hear a bunch of Old Testament rules for tribal societies who didn't understand why it rained.
Right, and you hear the same people talk about hell and damnation at the same time as they talk about the Old Testament when there's not even a hell in the Old Testament.
Yeah. Now, did you get a chance to catch the Bill Moyers' Is God Green, Bill Moyers America segment last night on PBS?
No, I didn't.
It is available online, and I advise anyone who's interested in these questions of the evangelical community versus politics, right-wing politics in America, to watch it. Because Moyers went out and he found this split. Now, mind you, these people are still crazier than a run-over dog when it comes to gay folk. They're crazy when it comes to who can get married or why they can get married. They're crazy when it comes to their urgent desire to control a woman's insides. But lo and behold, they're coming around on the idea of not ruining the planet for the rest of the other, you know, for the rest of their fundy brethren.
There's a group that was formed maybe 6 months ago of evangelicals. In opposition to that group, people like Jerry Falwell and other evangelists have stepped forward and said that, no, we don't need to be involved with environmentalism because then we'll be associated with liberals and we'll be advocating paganism and so on.
They're worshiping the creation and not the creator.
Yes, and we will, and my favorite one from Falwell, it could damage the economy. It's a strange thing to hear a minister telling us that we should be serving mammon as opposed to serving God. But when you get down to it all right now, the religious right, there's a piece that I wrote not too long ago called Segregationists Begat the Religious Right. Because if you look at where the Christian coalition, the moral majority, especially the moral majority back in 1979 where it was formed, it came out of a decision, not about abortion, not about prayer in school, but it came from a 1972 court decision that Jimmy Carter decided that he was going to enforce, namely that Bob Jones University could no longer practice segregation and receive tax-exempt status. And when Carter went to do that, the fundamentalists went wild. If you want to look at the origin of the modern religious right, you have to look no further than segregationists.
Do you have ready access to any information on that, Richard? Because I am not familiar with that. You brought something to the table that...
you can read that. I wrote a piece called Segregationists Begat the Religious Right. You can find it at Op-Ed News. It's probably, if you Google under religious right, it might still be in the top 10. I don't know.
Okay, well, I'm going to go and have a look at that because... What a bright and shining light that is on the fundamental hypocrisy of these people. You're telling me that the moral majority and this whole evangelical politicized movement was born out of a desire to preserve segregation?
I'm telling you that according to, you know who Paul Weyrich is, right?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
According to him, he had tried for years, starting in 1972, to get fundamentalist leaders involved in politics. As to abortion, he said their basic position was, well, that's just another reason why we don't need to be involved with the sins of the world. We don't need to be involved with politics because it's all too evil. It was not until the mid-years of Jimmy Carter's term, okay,
mm-hmm,
that they got very upset because Carter pushed the Supreme Court decision from 1972, was Green versus Connolly, I believe, that said Bob Jones could no longer segregate and receive tax-exempt status. The evangelicals, Jerry Falwell and his crew had first supported Carter, but when Carter did this, they turned on Carter. In 1979, the moral majority was born. In 1980, the evangelicals provided enough votes to put Reagan over the edge.
Oh, my God.
This all came out. All came out of them not wanting Bob Jones University to lose its tax-exempt status. So,
or not wanting Bob Jones University to keep little white girls and little African-American boys from holding hands.
Well, that, I believe, is a very strong part of it, but I also believe the money. I believe it had a lot to do with them wanting to serve mammon.
Gee whiz. I hold...
Isn't that sickening?
It's disgusting. My stomach's doing flip-flops at the very thought of it. And the thing is, I try really hard to be informed on this stuff, and this is brand new to me, so I really appreciate it, Richard.
Yeah, so it's based upon a review of Randall Balmer's book called Thy Kingdom Come, which is an excellent book. He's a religious historian at Columbia University. And it's a great book, and it reinforces what Kevin Phillips had to say, John Dean, for example. The modern neocon religious right movement, especially the religious right part of the neocon, came out of the Deep South. You want to know what happened to George Wallace? Just look at the Republican Party now.
Yeah.
Now, what's amazing about that is you got people like Francis Rice of the National Black Republican Association that was going around claiming that Martin...
Yeah, we ran that audio.
Yeah, wasn't that amazing? Yeah, I wrote some pieces about that. It was just... The lady was absolutely nuts. You know, shameless, just putting out bold face.
Yeah, just lying.
Just lying. Nothing else. But for these people to be going around now, Jerry Falwell saying, hey, we're the spiritual heirs of the civil rights movement. We are the modern abolitionists. What rank hypocrisy. But it's the same type of hypocrisy that's typified in the Bush administration when you got a guy that doesn't even believe in God, convincing George Bush. George Bush has said more than one time that God wanted him to be president.
And he said, you know, and then there's that famous remark where he said that it was in Jerusalem, it was reported in Haaretz, and he said, God told me to strike at Osama, and I did.
Oh, yeah.
And then
God told
me to strike at Saddam, and I did.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that just...
You know, and that's not like God inspired me, that's not, you know... The scripture moved me, Richard. That is, I hear voices in my head.
I hear voices, and my chief advisor doesn't even believe in God. However, you know what's really funny to me about Bush claiming that he thinks that God wants him to be president? Bush never wanted to be president until Karl Rove convinced him. Karl Rove is the person that convinced Bush that he hears God.
Yeah, George, honest to God, George wanted to be commissioner of baseball.
Yeah, he still does. He was never, you know, the problem with him being a baseball player, of course, was that while he was a good catcher, he couldn't hit for shit.
Yep.
You know, according to his little league coach. The other thing that's real interesting about that is when George Bush was a kid and as an adult, was he could not lose. Hey, let's play a game of tennis, okay? Hey, you won. No, wait a minute. I meant 2 out of 3. Wait, you won 2 out of 3? I meant 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
You know, dispute every call. George Bush is a person that will not play fair.
No. And his boyhood chums come, you know, they haven't had made any bones about coming out and talking about what a thug he is. I mean, the Bush family, let's not pretend that George Bush exists in a vacuum, Richard.
Oh,
he doesn't.
Goodness.
He is a product of this. I mean, you know, they want to be the American Caesars, but I have the distinct impression that what we're talking about are the American Borgias. I mean, this is...
That's a great analogy.
This is a family that comes to blows and doesn't speak to each other for a couple of weeks over, you know, who landed on Boardwalk first.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And listen to this. When little Georgie was a boy, when his daddy came home, they would have championships for tiddlywink. And George Sr. was so competitive that he would beat kids at playing tiddlywinks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing.
Well, I mean, this is the only family I've ever heard of where you can fairly say, you know, I went to a croquet match. I went to a fight and a croquet match broke out.
That's cute.
This is a bizarre family. I mean,
it really is.
You know, the Kitty Kelly book that everybody, you know, the right wing said, oh, there's no truth in that. And yet you'll notice that for everything that was published in the Kitty Kelly book, there has not been a single lawsuit filed over it. And that's because within the realms of American jurisprudence and defamation of character and libel and slander and things like that, truth is an absolute defense. You know, once you've proved the truth of your allegation, goodbye lawsuit. And like I said, they haven't sued Kitty Kelly at all. And, you know, she reported the sad and tragic end of George Bush's baby sister, Robin, who died of leukemia at like age 3. And they came home one day and you know, your heart. Yeah, we're talking about a child here, Richard. Your heart breaks for little George Bush. Because he looks at that old, that hateful beast that was his mother. And he says, Mommy, where's Sissy? And they literally said, we're taking you to the sitter, son, because we've got a tea time at the golf club.
They golfed
the day they put his baby sister under the earth.
Sounds so typical. And at the same time, trying to present themselves as being so representative of American traditional values.
Oh, so entitled, so utterly entitled to the adoration of the American people. If you follow this family's history, Richard, you'll find out that they have not earned an honest dollar since the turn of the 19th into the 20th century. Not one. One of the Walkers or the Bushes or whomever in that cabal got on the War Materials Board in the First World War, and they have not gotten off the public teat since.
Well, actually, I have to disagree with you there.
Okay.
Ever so slightly. One summer, George Bush got probably the one job that he was competent doing and should have held for the rest of his life. He was a sales clerk in the sporting goods department at Sears.
Well, that would make sense.
And if
he was still selling sporting goods,
that's where the guy belongs.
Yeah, there wouldn't be 2,700 dead people in Iraq. You know, Richard, that's one of the things that we, I guess it's easy to neglect. But you know, I play Sherman and the Wayback Machine from time to time, and I think about, you know, if Al Gore accedes to the presidency as he should have because he was elected, there is no 9/11.
Yeah. I was just...
There's no Iraq war.
That.
No 9/11, no Iraq war. There's no multi-billion dollar deficit. There's no $200 billion a year down a sandy little rat hole in the Middle East. What was gasoline per gallon the day that George Bush took office? $1.79?
$1.79, and what is it now? Did you see the piece not too long ago in the New York Times financial section that Goldman Sachs knew that gas prices were going to be falling way back in July?
Oh yeah, I did see that.
Isn't that amazing?
But you know, we can't say anything like collusion or restraint of trade, you know, because that makes us liberal moonbats.
Yes, indeed, conspiracy buffs. We're paranoid.
But the fact, you know, Greg Palast pointed out so effectively that even during the Lebanon crisis, you know, Lebanon didn't have a damn drop of oil anywhere. Neither does Israel. And yet the Lebanon crisis drove oil to $75, $76, $77 a barrel. And it was because, you know, George Bush would rattle his saber, then Ahmadinejad would rattle his saber, and the oil speculation market went, bleh. And
never seemed so well coordinated at times to you.
Oh yeah, it does. And I think you know, and the fact of the matter is, I think it's not so much it's coordinated between the likes of Bush and Ahmadinejad. It's coordinated at the upper echelons of Royal Dutch Shell and BP and ExxonMobil. And those are the guys who say, you know, listen, get on the phone, call Dick. Tell him that Ahmadinejad is doing really creepy stuff, and, you know, he'll go out and he'll tell George, and George will say something, Ahmadinejad, and the next thing you know, we'll have $75 a barrel.
You got it. I take it then that you read Palace's book, Armed to Madhouse, about regulating the price of wool.
Yeah, cover to cover.
Yeah, it makes a whole bunch of sense in doing that. Makes sense in terms of Exxon or whoever it was it the head of Shell Oil that came in and said, no, you will not allow for the Iraqis to mass produce oil, have control of their own oil.
No, they're not. No, the spigot is not going to go wide open.
Yeah. I think right now that's one of the things that needs to be reversed. If there's going to be any kind of stability in Iraq, you know, what is it, 70% of the Iraqis want us out right now?
Yeah.
And if we're going to go out, one of the things that we need to do is we need to reverse the agreement whereby they have to sell their oil or their oil be controlled by our company. That's got to go. The Iraqi people have to able to control their own assets.
Well, right, because job one was the denationalization of the Iraqi oil industry. You know, and you know, you and I are talking about this, Richard, the same way on Monday morning we might stand around the water cooler and talk about what happened in the NFL on Sunday if we were average Americans. That's fundamentally part of our problem. Average America isn't talking about this.
Very much so. But you know what? What I really, really believe, and I tend to be kind of an optimistic cynic, in that I'm very skeptical, but at the same time, what I'm amazed by is how much people want to hear liberal voices. American people, if you go and look, if you do polls on their basic values, it is absolutely amazing how many liberal values the average American endorses. So many Americans endorse things like the right to an abortion, for example, that Bush needs to go. But at the same time, if you go and ask them to identify themselves as liberal, oh, my God, you might as well ask them to identify themselves as a pedophile.
Sure, because, those two precisely have been linked when, in fact, it's conservatives and pedophiles.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a known, provable fact now. But you're absolutely right. So, you know, that makes our that sort of defines our job, doesn't it, Richard? If we believe in what we're talking about, if we believe in the truths that we hold dear, if we believe in the Constitution of the United States, then we have a moral, not just political, not just, you know, one-upmanship, but a moral obligation to speak up and to help other people not be afraid to speak up in their own right.
Absolutely. Freedom of speech. You either use it or we're going to lose it. It's just that simple. And right now, more than ever, we have to be speaking up. There has to be shows like you, your show. There has to be all kind of conversations going on like what's happening now. What I'm really encouraged by in terms of liberal voices is I frequently monitor Google News, and Google News is great because it's based upon an algorithm that uses popularity as opposed to relevance, as opposed to somebody paying money to get on there, as done with Yahoo and so on. And if you go to Google News and do, you know, searches, you can find leftist voices, liberal voices, consistently beating out right-wing and mainstream voices. And I know because I've been tracking my stories and other stories from Op-Ed News, and we have been beating out the mainstream media on a lot of stories. We've definitely been beating out the right-wing media. And for me, wow, what's going to happen if net neutrality goes down the tube?
Well, that proves that it was a direct attack on us and our position.
Yeah, I agree. Because right now, if they have the, you know, mythological free marketplace of ideas, it's on the net. And so long as liberal voices are given an equal opportunity, a level playing field, Americans are going to go with liberal voices. That's why mainstream media has to try so hard. Why Bush and the GOP has to use such deception and dirty tricks because they cannot play fair. Karl Rove, when he was 9 years old, learned that he cannot compete fairly in a political struggle battle. When he was 9 years old, supported Richard Nixon, and the little girl across the street who was the same age and was a Catholic supported John Kennedy. Anyway, she beat him in the street and gave him a bloody nose. Karl Rove said that was the first political battle he ever lost, and it determined his political future. And ever since then, Karl Rove has been fighting dirty because Karl Rove knows he hasn't got what it takes to win fairly.
Richard, if you don't mind, give us your last name so folks can look for your stuff on Op-Ed News.
It's Richard Mathis, M-A-T-H-I-S.
Okay, wonderful. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you. I've enjoyed this tremendously also.
If I may impose upon you for a favor, you sound like you're a well-traveled individual on the net. If you've enjoyed this and enjoy the programming, please help us spread the word about the Horn, because that's the only way this is going to grow. Is by people's good opinion and people's good words, because no amount of money that I spend to buy advertising somewhere is ever going to be as important as the good opinion of people who share our views and share the vision that we must change this nation.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I'll be glad to do everything I can, because from listening to what I have heard so far with the interviews the last few nights on your show, I'm very, very impressed. This is a type of intellectual discourse, honest exchange that needs to go on regularly, as opposed to all this yelling and hollering. You know, if you turn to most talk radio on mainstream media, you know what it sounds like to me? It's like going to a bar and listening to a bunch of drunks getting into a fight over something that nobody has the slightest idea of what they're talking about.
Well, I'm guilty of raising my voice from time to time, but I try to always maintain at least a modicum of self-control and intelligence about it.
Well, the big difference for me between people on the right and left when it comes to all this, on the left, when we get a little bit peed off, what we do is we get snotty and we get snide. We might make some cutting comments and put somebody down with some tongue-in-cheek humor. When people on the right get mad, they start calling us names and talking about ways of killing us.
Well, you're absolutely right, because, and the classic case in point, Keith Olbermann listed Michael the Savage Wiener the other night as his worst person in the world because Michael Savage called for, and I'm quoting here because I've got a better command of the language than he does. See, snotty and snide. He called for Madeleine Albright to be hung.
Oh, yes, yes. This from a guy who back in the 70s prided himself on going around showing how liberal he was by producing a photograph of him swimming naked with Allen Ginsberg in a swimming pool.
That's our boy.
I tell you what, don't you just love neoconservative hypocrisy?
Oh, yeah, it's like that that crazy Janice Rogers Brown was a Maoist at Berkeley, for God's sakes. You know, she just changed hats. She put the little red book away and she picked up the big book of neocon values.
Oh, yeah. If the neocons couldn't make it controlling liberals, if they couldn't succeed in taking over the world following Trotsky, then what the hell, they would go and do it with evangelicals.
Sure, exactly, and follow, Stalin instead.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, that really is the difference. It's the difference between Trotsky and Stalin when you get right down to it. Richard, thank you so much, and I'm going to go and look up your articles, and I'm especially fascinated with this Bob Jones business. I need to educate myself.
Don't we all?
Thank you so much. I hope
we'll
hear from you again. Take care.
We will. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And we roll onward to Sue calling in. Hey, Sue, welcome to the program.
Well, hi, Bob, and give a shout-out to everyone in the chat room. I mean, hello from the chat room.
Oh, yes, I know.
And high atop a pile of diebold machines in the steamy bowels of Ohio. I tell you, I've been stewing on this for the last few days, and I had to call in and say something about it because I haven't heard anyone mention it, and I don't know if many people have seen it. Remember about a year ago when, right at election time, because you can't let this 9/11 thing die, there was this offer for, I forget who the mint company was, it offered coins that were clad with gold recovered from the World Trade
Jackson.
Oh, I saw that advertised again last night.
Well, now, okay, so that was the gold. That was the gold coin, and that was found out to be a hoax. It's like, that ain't, you know, you suckers, you know.
Rubes.
You really think they'd give up that gold to put it on a stinking coin and sell them for $30 or whatever?
Yeah.
You know, it was insane. Well, now they've got another ad for gold coins, but now there's an insert that pops up that has
the... Yeah, it's the 3D commemorative coin. This is the one I saw last night.
Yes. And the silver on the pop-up section that has the Manhattan skyline and the World Trade Center is silver recovered from the World Trade Center. Yippee-i-o.
Yeah, recovered lovingly from the rubble of the World Trade Center.
Yes.
Yours for $29.95. Of course, wait, there's more.
This is ridiculous.
Am I good or what? I mean, can I do that? I've got a future in voiceovers.
You should really get into radio because you've got the voice for it. Fantastic. But you know, I wonder what the likes of Mann Coulter think about this. She would probably hail it as good old American capitalism. Yes, let's get that. So if it's even silver, you know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised because it took about a month for the gold coins, the supposed gold coins, to be found out to be a hoax. It's probably going to take a month for these silver coins, the silver inset, to be found out to be a hoax as well. That, you know, to capitalize, even if it is true, why the hell would anyone want to capitalize like that?
There's death all over that metal. You know?
Well, what they do, scrape the blood off of it.
Right.
That's just sick. And, you know, when you have the likes of Ann Coulter calling those four women that lost their husbands, and they wrote that book in the World Trade Center, they lost their husbands at the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
She calls them the Jersey Girls and calls them whores.
Yeah. Well, and but you know, let's
about
be
this coin bit.
Yeah, but let's be fair. That's not just Ann Coulter. That's Glenn Beck out there referring to Cindy Sheehan as a tragedy pimp. You know, I'm all kumbaya. I don't want to do anybody any harm. I'm a nice guy. You know, but you know, in a dark alley or all good and drunk up in a bar, I'd love to just rat slap Glenn Beck. I mean, I would.
Yes. Oh, he needs, you know, typical that people like Glenn Beck, that people like Ann Coulter would say those kinds of things about the women in New Jersey who lost their husbands on 9/11,
mm-hmm.
and Cindy Sheehan who had to bury her son because of this war. It's easy for them to chastise anybody that dares speak out against what has made her a millionaire, a multimillionaire. Because she doesn't have anything invested in it. Glenn Beck doesn't have anything invested in it.
No. Not their own lives or anyone else's.
No. No. It bothers them not.
Well, you know, the people who are in Iraq right now, for all of their support, the troops, they're toy soldiers to the Becks and the Coulters and the Limbaughs and the Savages and all these other freaks. I'll never forget watching that video of a confrontation between Randy Rhoads and some 24-year-old little goober with a 1962 Beatles mop top haircut. When she said, you know, when he was, you know, you liberals are why we're losing the war in Iraq, blah, blah, blah. And she said, you know, shut up and go. You're 24. When I was 20, I was in the Air Force, you know, Randy said, you go.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, you know, just because I support the war doesn't mean I have to join. Just because I like the Yankees doesn't mean I have to wear the uniform.
Yeah.
And you watch stuff like that, you know, it's out there at YouTube, and you watch it, and your eyeballs just roll back in your head, and you know, that guy actually said that, and right. somebody's still signing his paycheck.
You know, and there's been many times. I mean, with Mann Coulter and Glenn Beck and that dude that you were just talking about. Seriously, in my whole life, I'm 38 years old. I've never had to smack myself up alongside the head and say to myself, did I just hear that?
And now you got bruises.
Yeah. Well, maybe someday someone will come along and read my lumps for me, and they'll say, oh, you were a liberal, weren't you?
Oh, God, it's like Bugs Bunny at the Tea Party. One lump or two? Oh, two, please. Whack, whack. Yeah. It's where it's if you've got a half a brain and you live in America and you see 10% of what's going on, it's where you live, where you just walk around. You know how when it gets really bad, Sue, and you take your thumb and your middle finger and you just put them on the top of the bridge of your nose and you close your eyes and you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
I walk around like that. It's like I'm part of some cult that just walks around holding the bridge of their nose. Oh, you know.
Yeah. We're going to need Botox by the time this is all done, because to get rid of the worry lines around our eyes and that, from walking around with looks of confusion.
Yeah, and I feel so bad for you. And I'm not being snotty or anything here. I feel so bad for you living in Ohio. I mean, and you know, that's tough coming from a West Virginian. You know, that's got to hurt, and I don't mean for it to. But you know, your state is in the political septic tank of America. It's replaced Florida, for the love of God.
Yes. Well, I can tell you, and I've talked about this in the chat room a few times and that, but, you know, and because you really don't have many callers from Ohio, and that's what is really kind of surprising to me, is that there aren't more people from Ohio that call you.
I've got listeners who don't call.
Right.
I do.
Okay.
I do see some emails here and there, but you're right. I thought, or we were given the impression that you know, outside of little enclave somewhere around Cleveland, where they still polka and stuff, that you know, Democrats were just declared illegal in Ohio.
Well, you know, I can't tell you the level of embarrassment, deep embarrassment and shame that I felt when it was, you know, I kind of had a feeling on election night that, you know, there's something funky going on here in Ohio that's not on the up and up. And then, and especially with Robert Kennedy Jr.'s article in the Rolling Stone about how this state was hijacked in three.
Yeah, the lights all go on and, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, do I even tell people that I'm from Ohio? And then it's like, hell yes, I haven't done anything wrong.
I can make it worse, Sue.
Go ahead. Lay it on me.
Ancestral home of the Bush family?
Mm-hmm.
It ain't Connecticut. It's Ohio.
What? Is it the northern part or the southern part?
Columbus.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah. I mean, like this, like 20th century.
Ugh.
Sorry. I mean, that's what, but Prescott was raised in Columbus.
Oh.
You know, granddaddy that did business with the Nazis, mm-hmm. Prescott, yeah, raised in Columbus, left for World War I from Columbus, went to Yale from Columbus. Sure.
Ugh.
Sorry, told you.
Well, I'm going to need some Prilosec after that one. That is, I never knew that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's basically a St. Louis and Columbus connection.
Well, crying out loud.
Yeah, well, you know, sorry. But you know, that's not surprising. I mean, when I was in D.C., I pointed out to Wayne this gargantuan statue of Robert Taft. And I'm like, why the hell did they build a statue to Robert Taft in the first place? What did he ever do for anybody? Nothing.
And now his grandson's been convicted, the only sitting governor in Ohio to be convicted.
You know, welcome to the party. And you know, what are the chances you're going to wind up with Ken Blackwell for governor, aren't you?
No, we're not.
You don't think
seriously.
So?
Seriously, Bob, I don't think we are. I think Ted Strickland will be the next governor of Ohio, and Sherrod Brown is going to replace Mike DeWine as our senator.
I think that's an extreme likelihood, and I read somewhere today that Mean Gene Schmidt's not even in a happy place right now.
Oh, well, you know what?
You know, in a district where they throttle little baby Democrats in their cradles.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? After everything she said about Paul Hackett, whatever happens to her, you deserve it, baby.
Oh, yeah. I mean, did you see the thing when it came out a month or so ago about her lying on her website about the marathon running?
Yeah.
I mean, these people they won't even tell the truth about stuff that doesn't matter.
And then there was something about plagiarism here, too.
Yeah. I mean, Blackwell, Mean Gene Schmidt, Mike DeWine. I have a hard time just really outright hating Mike DeWine. He's like beneath. It's as though he's beneath my contempt. He's such a toady. He is such an absolute, utter, unmitigated lick spittle for the Bush administration. He's not even like a person. He's like a thing. You know, he's like a little machine. You just wind him up, and he goes and kisses George Bush's butt.
And he needs to push his stupid glasses up, or let me slap him off his face or something, because I'm tired of him looking like a dork.
Well, yeah, get the dork out of the Senate, because Sherrod Brown's a pretty cool guy.
Oh yeah.
And I've got issues with a couple of the votes that he's cast in the House lately, but I'm hoping he's going to get well from it.
Yes, me too. And I called his campaign office over that the torture bill, because he voted yes on the torture bill.
Yeah.
And I called his campaign office and kind of got the standard answer, but then I even asked the woman that I spoke to at his office how much of his voting yes on that would be that if had he voted no, DeWine, that would have given DeWine an excellent position to take on the campaign trail. Going into the election, she said she was sure it probably had something to do with it. You know, I was.
Well, it had to, because after all, the DeWine campaign ran that sleazy, sleazy ad where they had to dummy up the world, the smoke in the World Trade Center, because it wasn't scary enough.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, this is what you're up against. I got another story here. It's not Ohio this time, but it's sleazy out of Illinois. The campaign of whoever the goober is who's running against Tammy Duckworth out there. You know, this is the Army major who lost two legs in a helicopter accident that her campaign opponent, the Republican, turned around and accused her of wanting to cut and run. Yeah, nice. Well, their latest trick is to put out a fake Social Security letter that attacks Tammy Duckworth. You know, orange envelope, big eagle on it. It's amazing. Here it is. Big old Social Security eagle in the upper left-hand corner of the orange envelope. Notice, Social Security benefit change proposal. And then you open the thing, and it's a sleazy attack on Tammy Duckworth.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Yeah. This is just where they are. Sue, we've got to do the news, or Agnes is going to hit me with a skillet.
Okie dokie.
God, I've enjoyed this.
I have too, Bob.
Thank you so much. And hang in there. You'll get the Pepto-Bismol, and, you know, the Bushes aren't from Ohio. Just keep telling yourself they're not from Ohio. They're not from Ohio. Because no state wants to claim them. Texas won't have them now. The world's going to figure it out, Sue, and they're going to foist the Bushes back off on you guys.
Oh, that's fine, because I'm moving to Pennsylvania.
We'll talk to you later,
Thanks,
Sue.
A million, Bob.
Bye now. All right, to the news, and when we come back, more of your phone calls. A couple of lines open, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. This is the Head On Radio Network, and I'm Chatty Bob Kincaid.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.
This is a Quality News Network. A United Nations vote on a draft resolution against North Korea for its reported nuclear test may not come until next week. That's because China and Russia are opposed to sanctions outlined in a new U.S. draft resolution that was circulated today. China is opposed to any sanctions, and Russia's U.N. ambassador said the U.S. should give diplomacy more time to work. The new draft drops the requirement that all cargo entering and leaving North Korea be inspected, but it does condemn the nuclear test and demands that the North return to six-party talks. It also demands that Pyongyang not conduct any more tests. On Capitol Hill, the House Ethics Committee is still trying to determine when House leaders became aware of former Representative Mark Foley's inappropriate behavior toward teenage boys. In testimony today, Foley's former chief of staff said he told House Speaker Dennis Hastert's office about the conduct at least 3 years ago, a charge Hastert's chief of staff denies. In Baghdad today, gunmen stormed a Sunni television station and killed 11 people. At least 21 people died in attacks around the capital. Also, 40 more tortured bodies were found throughout the city. More than 40 U.S. soldiers have been killed in Iraq this month. ABC News reports that the British terror cell that was allegedly plotting to blow up transatlantic flights raised money through eBay. Intelligence reports show that at least one suspect financed the operation by buying and selling items on the Internet auction site. In California's Salinas Valley, investigators are closing in on the source of the recent deadly E. coli outbreak. They say the bacteria was found in cattle fecal samples, but they also say the cattle are not the definite cause of the outbreak. In Virginia, former Democrat Governor Mark Warner has announced he will not run for president in 2008. He said he made the decision because of family reasons and that he wants a real life. In Rancho Mirage, California, former President Gerald Ford has been hospitalized, reportedly for medical tests. In Pennsylvania, the Amish schoolhouse that was the site of a fatal shooting earlier this month has been demolished. It will be replaced with a green pasture. And in New York, investigators are going through the debris from yesterday's plane crash into a high-rise condo. New York Yankees pitcher Corey Lytle and his flight instructor were killed. It's not yet been determined who was piloting the plane. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
A new species of mouse has been discovered on the island nation of Cyprus. It's the first new terrestrial mammal species discovered in Europe in decades. It has a bigger head, eyes, ears, and teeth than other European mice. The U.S. trade deficit grew more than expected in August to an all-time high. It was nearly $70 billion, mostly due to higher oil prices. The Government Accounting Office reports that credit card late fees now average $34. That's a 40% increase from a decade ago. The FCC is delaying its decision regarding the $78.5 billion proposed merger between AT&T and Bell South until tomorrow. Next month, Coca-Cola will launch a new drink that it says burns calories. The drink, Enviga, contains a green tea extract that, combined with caffeine, speeds up the body's metabolism. A new 4-gigabyte iPod Nano is being endorsed by Bono and Oprah. $10 of the $199 product will be donated toward helping HIV and AIDS patients in Africa. China's labor body is working to unionize workers at Kodak and Dell. That follows a successful campaign to organize employees at the 62 Walmart outlets in China. Light Sweet crude settled at $57.86 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 96 points at 11,948. NASDAQ up 37, S&P 500 up 12. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
9 minutes after the hour, and we're stacked up right now. And I'm going to go, I want to make every phone call count. And we've got a new caller calling in from Milwaukee. Nat is joining us. Hey, Nat, welcome to the program. So glad you called.
Hello there. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Well, I'll just try to make it quick. I know you got lots of callers, but I am actually calling to agree with Karl Rove.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Well, when he said that the evangelicals coming out of this new book, that these people were nuts, he is right on.
Yeah, I know. I can sit down across the table. You got that one, front. Yeah, they are.
But you know what I was thinking? I think Rove is largely unaware of how Christianity came to be, you know, coming from the 4th century onwards, is that, you know, since all this, like, government money, all this federal money is running around, I think you bring back the Aryan Christian.
Okay, you're gonna have to stretch that out a little bit for me.
Aryan Christians, they believed in radically different, at least at that time, it wasn't really that radical, but now it would be, believed that the Son was distinct from the Father, meaning God.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this huge controversy of, was, you know, Jesus like the Father, or was he distinct from him? Well,
kind of like the Gnostics.
Yeah, that's what they got relegated down into, because they obviously didn't win, but support for them actually changed hands through whatever emperor after Constantine, you know, pretty much ended the Diocletian persecution.
Right.
Around, like, 396 or 386, I forget the date. But, you know, I'm thinking, since we got all this federal money around, you know, we just get the Arianism back, get the Arian Christians back up, and let them, you know, kind of tear each other apart.
Yeah, religious war. There's a future for America.
Yeah, well, and see, and that's the whole thing, is this is why we don't do this kind of thing. This is why we went as a country away from this in the beginning, because the whole battles back in the past was, what is the true Christianity, you know? By and large, that whole controversy has just been buried and forgotten about, you know, and now, the whole Protestant, you know, revolution.
Well, there was a lot of learning and a lot of introspection that went into the creation of our Constitution, Nat. And one of the considerations was the fact that, you know, they had the benefit firsthand of, you know, within the last 100 years being aware of a profoundly bloody European history. Whether you know, whether it was the suppression of the Protestants in France, or the wars between Protestants and Catholics in the Netherlands. Or the more immediate bloodshed between Protestants or Episcopals, Church of England, and Catholics, and then you know, the third sect, the Puritans, the Calvinists, that crowd within England and the British Isles themselves,
and even in this country,
yeah,
there was religious laws regarding. You know, if you were a Puritan, you stepped foot on Quaker ground, well, you know, you're SOL.
Yeah, there's a great old joke by Stephen Wright about that. That was my chuckle. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. So having all of this in front of them, the only common sense alternative they could come to, the framers of the Constitution, was to say, we want no part of it. Everybody, you guys, you know, believe what you want to believe, but don't bring it into the house of government.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think, you know, when I hear people like Bill O'Reilly, like, you know, they want to bring these secular people into government and da 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 da. It's like, you know, you can be religious and secular, you know, when it comes to government. This, I don't know what is up with people like him who's Catherine Harris too, and her ridiculous comments.
Oh God.
Are these people that blindly unaware?
No, they think they're motivating, and it's comments like Catherine Harris's, and I'm glad you brought that up. It's comments like hers that prove the thesis that's brought out in this book. These people are being gamed. They're being played. They're being punked. I mean, you know, it's, you know, let Ash, you know, somebody needs to send Ashton Kutcher out to James Dobson to give him the trucker hat. You know, it's done. These people are being used.
Yeah, it's a shame. And you know, I hate to see, as much as I'm, you know, a progressive, secular progressive in that way, along with my, you know, the people I work out here in the Democratic Party who are very, you know, Christian-orientated, to see that get played on both sides And unfortunately, it just seems like we're spiraling down towards this. And hell, I don't know when to, you know, how do you bring the brakes here? You know, it's articulation here, but
I understand, because it's an incredibly difficult question. You know, I make fun of these goons, these goobers, because they deserve to be made fun of. The at least the leadership does. The people who follow them are, they're just sheeple. They are lost people. They are soulless people. They're people who have nothing to hang on to. They can't understand the world that they live in. They don't understand why it is that, you know, they're going to church, they're doing everything right, and yet their marriage is on the rocks. The kids are failing school. You know, Mary Jane's on Mary Jane, and little baby Mike is on meth, and the eldest daughter's pregnant and needing an abortion, but they can't get an abortion because the preacher says it's no good. So, you know, here's mommy and daddy, 55 years old, raising an infant.
Yeah.
And their world is collapsing around them, Nat, and they have no idea why it's happening. So they go to their fundy church, or they go to their mega church, and some guy with a $2,000 microphone headpiece is a rock show set up to rival that of Kiss or The Who or anybody else. Is telling them that it's because the gays can get married. The fact of the matter is, if these people were being honest with their parishioners or their flock or whatever you want to call it, they would explain to them that the reason their world is falling apart is because of hateful conservative Republican politics.
Yeah, so that would probably get them an IRS audit then.
Well, maybe it would, but you can explain to people that your family, that most families fall apart, most divorces occur not because one party or the other goes out and romps around in bed with somebody else. Most marriages in this country, Nat, fall apart because the two people cannot can't afford to be together anymore. The financial pressures on the American middle class family. It's like the forces that underlie the San Andreas Fault. I mean, it's plate tectonics. It's powerful. And when you're working, dad's working two jobs, mom's working two jobs. You can't be home with the kids. Everything's going to hell in a handcar, and you still can't make the car payment.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, but I think it's a little more complicated why adults, I sound like a 10-year-old. Why couples and married couples.
Oh, no, yeah, they're...
But it's definitely not because, a slight minority of our population are gay.
No, and it's not because...
It's just a scapegoat and a red herring and,
right.
But
it's good to get them out to the polls. It's not because gay people want to get married. It's not because we lack Ten Commandments rocks in our buildings. It's not because God is or isn't in the pledge. And it's not because, John Kerry or some other Democrat is going to come and get your deer rifle.
Yeah. Well, but, that's the thing. It's like the especially the Dominionists will cite the DOI as, the creator phrase in there. But the DOI is, first of all, it's not a legal document. And,
no.
And I think, so secondly, it's a follow-up to something that you just said on that, but no, sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry about that.
No. No. You're making really good points, and you're making really good sense. And, I think about a place like Wisconsin, and I figure it's got to be some sort of, compared to where I am, it's like a semi-liberal wonderland where you actually pay attention to the needs of people. But every state in this union, Nat, is under assault from the right wing. A very good friend of ours, a friend of the show, once lived out in Oregon when it was a progressive state, but it came under assault. Everywhere that there's been any liberalism, there has been a wholesale assault on those liberal values, and those values include feeding the poor, clothing the naked, housing the homeless, providing decent jobs, decent schooling opportunities, and every last one of those things are part and parcel of the list that the right wing has out there of things that are to be destroyed.
That's still true. I still totally agree with that, but with the conservative comeback is, you think we're selfish. Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, because we think. We don't believe they're selfish. We think they're selfish.
Well, then we have their actions to prove it. And I always like to say to at that point, it's like, well, you know, your responsibility for conservative stops with yourself. Well, you know, to a liberal, it not only starts at yourself, but it ends with society as large, at large.
Yeah.
So we actually make the individual in a society much more responsible.
And at the end of the day, society will never collapse because of people looking out for their fellow humans. Society can, however, collapse because of neglect of those self-same fellow humans.
That's a great point. Great point. Well, hey, thanks for hearing me out.
Oh, my pleasure.
I get on your show for a while. I don't really have much else to say.
Well, that's okay. I hope we'll hear from you next time you do.
You totally will.
All right. Take care, Nat.
All right.
Be well.
Thank you very much.
Bye now. And on to Peter in Tallahassee. Hey, Peter, thanks for waiting.
Hey, Bob. Was that ELO for the caller a little while ago?
Yeah.
She's great. You need to give her a show.
Yes, we did. There's a lot of people that need a show. I mean, that's one of the things. That's one of the cool things about doing this. The erudition and the energy and the passion that people bring to this program. Never mind anything that I do. It's what other folks bring to this that make it such a joy to be a part of.
Well, she was great. I was so thrilled. I had chatted with Agnes for a few minutes, and then she put me on hold, I thought that was her. I couldn't believe it. I was so thrilled to hear that. Well, you know, I know you have people stacked up, and I was going to say, really, I didn't have much tonight, and honestly, I don't, but there's just something I wanted to point out. I can't let the day pass without pointing out.
Okay.
Today is, of course, October the 12th, and today is the 8th anniversary of what happened to Matthew Shepard.
Yes, it is.
Yes, he was, of course, beaten nearly to death and left hung on a fence in Wyoming to die.
Crucified.
Yes, and he was 21 years old, if I recall. And so it's just a day that I wanted to point out. And today is National Coming Out Day, too.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, so isn't this like the 305th time I've come out on... Let's go for 300.
Yeah, this is that great line where I say, get out, and you go, I am!
So I wanted to tell you what the Republicans did for National Coming Out Day.
Okay.
And it's... In Florida, you know, Charlie Crist has been, he's like the attorney general, and he's been speculated, rumored to be gay forever in Florida, another Republic closet. And so anyway, there's an independent candidate running in Florida. See, what is his name? I think his name is Davis. And anyway, so today on a South Florida a news talk station, he... started saying that it's common knowledge in Tallahassee that Crist is gay, and it's about time that Crist acknowledged it, and on and on. And he started saying things like, come out wherever you are to, you know. The Republicans are melting down big time. And, of course, their official response from Charlie Crist's office is no comment. And, you know, only a few months ago, Crist was on the air saying, you know, I'm not, and not that there's anything wrong with that. He says, make some reference to the Seinfeld show, you know. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but, you know.
Well, but, you know, I mean, we have our fun, Peter, but the fact of the matter is, especially where politics are concerned, if you cannot be honest with yourself.
Oh, yeah.
How in God's name can you suppose to stand for election by the people and tell them that you will be honest with them?
Oh, but it's just, you know, he makes the perfect Republican. And, of course, Chris is saying that he's against gay marriage and blah, 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 blah. You know,
yeah,
stuff.
Because we got family values.
Got family values in a corn cob.
Oh, you are mean tonight.
I am sorry I talked to Agnes for too long before you put me on the air.
She's a bad influence. Look,
Agnes,
I mean.
I cannot be left in a room together. It just won't work.
No, bad, you know, it's Dennis Hopper, all of bad things, man. Yeah.
Oh, Lord, the plot. We come up with. So anyway, that's all I got to say. I wanted to point out the Matthew Shepard thing. I just thought it was
Thank
important.
You.
And I'm loving the show. I'm so glad that Ben Burtt's got that server fix.
Oh, me too. And I mean, there's some. In a way, it was a pain in the rear. But by the same token, it says a little something about the way we're growing, Peter.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it really does. It's amazing. There were people. Everybody was upset. Yeah, you know, it just never ceases to amaze me what's happening with this network. We are, It just, I'm just so proud of you and Agnes and all the sacrifices that you've made.
Well, but it's everybody, like you haven't sacrificed.
Oh, yeah, you know, but, gee, you guys, you know, when we get to heaven, we're going to have to make sure there's a special little street named after you. And I'll come up with something really crafty for it. I'll go give you the of course, I'm, you know, a god now on a personal conversation level.
St. Peter. I mean, you know, look, who am I to question?
You're right. I'm sure I could get it through. Don't sweat it.
Yeah. Peter, take care.
See you guys later.
Bye now. Oh, National Coming Out Day. Ken Millman, where are you? And to Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
How are you?
Oh, we're still fighting the good fight.
Yeah, that's all we can do.
Yeah, we may have our share of reapers, but we're still trying to bump them into the ground.
Well, that's and yeah, that's the fact. You know, the fight was not lost in Oregon.
No.
You know, you're still hanging on to some decent principles and some pretty good thinking, some right thinking, if you will. Not
yeah,
right.
Yeah, it does help that quite a few of the Republicans that this state produces are people like Tom McCall. And today's Republican Party would not want to have anything to do with that man.
No, no.
No, because he was about as, well, he told great big corporations up one side of the river and down the other, clean up your mess or I will shut you down. And when they didn't, he shut them down.
Well, and you know, it's the modern Republican Party that I have my issues with.
Yeah.
You know, I never forget that it was a Republican Republican from Nebraska, no less, who was instrumental in the creation of the Tennessee Valley Authority that lifted an entire geographic region of this nation up out of poverty. You know, so, you know, credit has to be given where credit is due. There have been good Republicans. Unfortunately, Susan, I don't know that there are any right now. Everyone says, well, you know, what about Olympia Snowe and Susan Collins and Lincoln Chafee? Well, you know, when the rubber was on the road, those people had a chance to stand up and be decent, and they didn't.
Anyway, the reason I wanted to call in, other than the fact that I was going to mention that tomorrow is Friday the 13th for the superstitious among us.
Yes.
Did you see the article on CNN.com about the jobless man? He couldn't get a job, so he knocked off a bank, took the money over to the bank guard and said, here, it's your day to be a hero, and told the judge,
put me in jail.
I couldn't get a job, so this was the best I could do.
You know, and the sad thing is, if the judge looks at that hard enough, he's going to find that there was an absence of intent. And the absence of intent provides an absence of a conviction.
You know, in a way, I have to tell you, I'm kind of in the same boat, because if it comes down right down to it where I'm facing losing my house or going into ICU,
mm-hmm.
You won't be hearing from me. Check the local jails, because I'll have gone down and slugged a cop.
Oh, Jesus, Susan, I don't even want to think about something like that.
Well, it's either that, you know, they have to take care of you in jail. And
yeah, three hots and a cot.
Yeah, and if you're sick, they've got to take care of you. They've got to take you to the hospital.
Yeah, because you take your prisoner as you find them. Sure.
Yeah. And if necessary, that's what I'll do.
Oh God! But please let us know before something like that happens, Susan. And we'll try to help.
Don't want to do that.
No. But we'll look. I mean, if we're going to be here, we're going to be here for a reason.
Definitely.
You know, and we look out after each other.
Yeah. My biggest thing is if the net neutrality thing gets resurrected and they do fix it so we cannot have free access to the net, I'm packing up my 80-some-year-old husband and I'm throwing myself on Canada's mercy.
I can't blame you. Or many other, or just about any other civilized nation's mercy. I understand.
Because
but the fact of the matter is, if we take back the Congress,
Yeehaw.
Well, I don't think net neutrality is going to become nearly as much of an issue because there will be some reasonable level of regulation to prevent them from ghettoizing the internet.
I sincerely hope that assuming that the House and the Senate are taken back, I sincerely hope that the first thing they do is start enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah. They have it's still on the books. They just haven't been enforcing it. Merger between the two bills.
Sure.
Sherman would be, the writers of the Sherman Antitrust Act would be rolling over in the grave.
Well, right, because it's a direct assault on the whole idea of busting up Ma Bell in the first place.
Yeah. So, as far as I'm concerned, start enforcing that. That will also take care of the fun and games with the consolidation of the media.
Yeah.
They won't like that talk.
Well, see, there's a very interesting angle in what you just mentioned, Susan, because, we talk about what we want out of a Democratic majority in the Congress. But what we have to realize, and I realized the stream was down during most of the conversation, one of the things that David Lindorf mentioned was the fact that we have a job to do if we get a Democratic majority back. Mm-hmm. And we have got to, it's got to be like a full-time job. It's got to be every blessed day. We put you here for a reason. These are the things that we want done. Don't tell me why you can't.
Get off your
tell me when you're gonna.
Get off your tush and do it.
To a certain extent, it's about providing an example to these good for nothing bastards in the Republican Party. We're going to show them what it means to be a majority because we are going to direct government to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Which 9 times out of 10 is going to mean repealing most of what Bush has done.
Right. And opposing him, if by a miracle, and it's getting to be a smaller and smaller miracle, but it still seems a little bit miraculous. If we get the Senate back, I want a promise from whoever is head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and that would be Pat Leahy. I want a promise that George Bush will not appoint another Supreme Court justice for the remainder of his term. Period.
Yeah. Solid.
It just isn't going to happen, the nuclear option that we're going to, as a majority, be as willing to use it on them as they were on us. And if they so much as peep, we're going to slap them down a rat hole. I'm kind of mean that way, Susan. I've got a taste for vengeance.
Well, let's face it. What goes around comes around.
Yeah, and it's about time.
My whole life is wrapped up in that. Basically, that's everything. What goes around comes around sooner or later. Fine. Let the Republicans learn that lesson.
Yeah. And let them learn it so that they will tell little baby Republicans in the cradle that.
Don't do this. You will pay and pay bad. And
exactly.
In the meantime, we can get our boys out of that horrendous mess.
Exactly. Somebody add you. I heard that.
That was my husband. He is a veteran not only of Korea, but World War II. So he knows what war is like, and he knows this is not one that he can support. He supported World War II. He couldn't really support Korea, but then they drafted him, so he didn't have much choice.
Yeah. At that point, it's not a question of support. It's a question of survival.
But this... He gets so angry. You're liable to end up talking to him one of these days.
That'll be fine. Well, Susan, so good to hear from you. And don't hesitate to reach out if you need help, please.
Oh, I won't. It's just that when you reach a certain point, there's sometimes.
I know. I know. We've been at that point.
Yeah, I know. By the way, I almost moved out to West Virginia. I saw a house that I wanted to buy.
Oh, well, it's a beautiful place, but it depends on where you are. I mean, if you get a chance and you watch,
the Moyer thing.
Yeah, did you see the thing with the Pepto-Bismol?
Oh my God!
that's one of the reasons why I was glad I didn't move out, because,
Well, you know, we've got a well on this property, and I'm going to try the Pepto-Bismol trick here and just, you know, just to make sure. Because there was strip mining, you know, 5-6 miles out our road a few years ago.
Yeah, and that stuff doesn't go away.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
I'm going to be sending Agnes some pictures of where I live, and I'm 3 blocks from the Columbia River.
Oh, my heavens, I can't wait to see them.
And for one thing, you can drive a few miles and see an old-growth Douglas firs.
Oh,
they've never been touched by man.
Oh.
There's clear-cutting, yes, but they don't blow the tops off the mountains.
Right. They give the mountain a chance to come back to life.
Yeah, this is a green and misty land, and oh, you would love it.
Oh, all we got to do is get a little bit more successful, and then we can travel. You know, we can travel one at a time. Somebody's got to be chained to the desk here.
Susan. You have a real nice evening, and take care.
Will do. Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye, Bob.
Bye. Our associate news editor, Susan, from Columbia City, Oregon. Oregon's got wonderful people in it because both of our news ninjas are in Oregon. I want to go there someday. Let's see. Let me see. Let me see.
My list.
Ah, Lee. Yeah. Hey, Lee. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Rob. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. You?
Good. Hey, did I just hear you say, about a half an hour ago that you would like to meet Michael Savage in a dark alley? And
no, that was Glenn. That was Glenn Beck.
Oh, Glenn Beck. You know, watch yourself. You're starting to sound more and more like Mike Malloy.
It comes from the same place.
Okay.
I think it comes from an honest place. You know, I'm Mr. Peaceful guy, but these people, you know. Just take it all away from you.
Yeah.
You know, anybody that would call Cindy Sheehan a tragedy pimp.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
He's the same guy that wanted to blame the Pace thing on the kids from Phil.
Right. You know. Yeah. We had that clip. He said, "You know, do I know? You know, maybe that kid was a Democrat." You know, and it brings out the. You know, how tied in I am to great movies and stuff, and I think back to that scene in the film version of The Untouchables where Robert De Niro's standing behind the guy and he's got the ball bat and do you like baseball?
Oh,
I like
yeah.
baseball. You know, how can you talk about a fellow American that way? I mean, I get mad at these people. I don't want to kill them. Glenn Beck, Michael Savage, entitled to a good thrashing.
Well, you know, it was found that I think Tokyo Rose was exonerated, but these guys, Limbaugh, Michael Savage, these guys have done worse than Tokyo Rose.
Well, yeah, they have. They've done everything in their power, Lee, to destroy the Republic.
Yeah. But, you know, the Christian right, I mean, we've heard a lot about it, you know, the past few days. But I think they could learn a lot from the Amish. I mean, come on, I just heard today that the schoolhouse that tragic episode happened in has been demolished.
Yeah, they bulldozed it today.
Yeah. And, I mean, I just thought, oh, man, they just can't face going back into it. But, you know, I was born and raised just outside of Philadelphia.
Okay.
And when I was in high school, the Vietnam War was going on. And we'd go between classes. We had several buildings, and we'd go between classes at lunchtime. And I remember there were, I don't know if they were Amish or Pennsylvania Dutch or Mennonite or whatever, but... They were out there handing out leaflets about the Vietnam War, about, you know, how unfair it was, you know. And there were, you know, the kids, you know, going from class to class, they were heckling the Amish or the Pennsylvania Dutch or whatever. And some of them started pushing them. You know, the bullies started pushing them. throwing things at them, and they did nothing. They did absolutely nothing. They didn't try to fight back. They just stood their ground. And after a while, you know, a few minutes, the real tough guys in the school were saying, hey, leave them alone. Where, the, you know, the bullies were trying to push them around.
Yeah.
The tough guys were saying, hey, leave them alone. It was this thing that, and I watched it, that came, it came over me. These guys had a real inner calmness that, I mean, it was awesome.
And that, you know, that heritage goes back as far as, you know, the they were draft resistors in the First World War, Lee. And at Leavenworth, there are historical accounts, you know, that they can't wear buttons.
I didn't know that.
They have to wear, it's like a toggle and a loop or something.
Okay, I know what that is. Yeah.
So the prison garb they were given had buttons on them. And they would tear the buttons off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's no more spit and polish place than Fort Leavenworth. People don't think of it that way, but it is.
Yeah.
Because everything is by the book. Everything is regulation. And the Amish were hung by their thumbs from their jail cell doors. Or hung by their wrists until their hands swelled up to 2 and 3 times their normal size, the turned black and cracked open and bled. Because they would not have buttons on their clothing.
That's true faith, you know.
Yeah, it is.
And you know, I'm African American, okay, and back during that time, I also was involved in, you know, sit-ins, and things like the nonviolent sit-ins.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, there was a big difference. I mean, the Martin Luther King had the same type of inner calmness, but it didn't extend to the people around him. I mean, there were ministers and there were leaders that were telling us, you know, don't get angry, don't get mad, okay? We're seething inside, okay?
Yeah.
And we actually had to have, I don't know, you would call them, referees or whatever to keep us calm. But the Amish, these guys, every single one of them, they had an inner calm. They didn't have to have people telling them to be cool. And it was just an awesome sight. And that's something I'll never forget. I mean, I could never go up against an Amish person.
No.
They had more strength than me.
I got upset last Friday night, Lee, when they announced that they had forgiven the wife and children of that killer. That really did profoundly upset me because, you know, those children aren't in need of forgiving. But I agree with, I mean, they've got a heritage, of doing in large part the right thing and just trying, you know, they want to live their lives and be left alone and not be embroiled in our, you know, our filthy little escapades. And yeah. That part I admire. You know, I'm glad that the world, the nation has reached out to them as they have. And in great decency, they, you know, the funds that have been pouring into them, they have been apportioning out to that man's, poor wife and children.
Yeah, they insisted that his family be taken care of. And that is loving the human being, loving your fellow man.
Yeah, it is.
That's what these Christian rights butthole
makes
needs to aspire to be.
Yeah, well, that's what they make such a mockery of, Lee. This is, and that really does point up the profundity of the religious rights hypocrisy, because they make sport of the most fundamental tenets of what could be, when it is practiced in the right way, a profoundly moving and life altering faith.
You know, also, they, can you imagine that, the Amish way and the Christian right way? The Christian right way is to try to somehow justify 655,000 dead Iraqis.
Yeah.
655,000 of them.
Yeah, doesn't it just make your skin crawl?
Oh, man.
And, well, David Lindorf over at thiscan'tbehappening.net, he's got an extrapolation on that. Based on the numbers that were published, he did a little bit of background work and, you know, got out the calculator and stuff. That means out of that 655,000 people, the American troops or the American military has killed outright 132,000 Iraqi men, women, and children who were non-combatants.
Well, you know, even if there was only 40,
right,
or 30,000, as Bush says, I mean, he throws this off like callous. Oh, it's only 30,000. Come on, out of their population, if you got 30,000 people, you know something? Everybody in Iraq, every single man, woman, and child in Iraq knows somebody or is related to somebody that has been killed. Now, how in the world can you expect those people to do anything but hate Americans?
I'm not talking, you're right, and we're not talking about hating America for the next 10 or 15 years. We're talking about thousand-year hate.
Generations.
Generational stuff. You know, fathers teaching sons, teaching grandsons, teaching great-great-grandsons. And when the day comes that one of them finally gets a chance to get vengeance, they will take it.
Yes.
And at that point in time, this may be your progeny, my progeny, 2, 3, 4, 5 generations down the road. And it's our duty, I think, to pass it on to our families that when that day comes, it will be, we need to look up and say this, that generation needs to look up and say it is because of George W. Bush and then spit on the ground. I mean, there is a
war.
Yeah, there's a day coming, Lee, when little children literally will spit on the ground at the mention of that man's name.
Yes. Now, I don't want to rant on, but look, one of the most callous statements I think I have ever heard, disgusting, and it's on the news all over the place, every day, just about, the phrase, we got to fight them there so we don't have to fight them here. Now, can you imagine telling that to an Iraqi that we're coming, we got to burn your house so we don't have to burn my house? Can you imagine a statement like that? Fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here? We got to destroy your country so that we don't have to fight in our country. That is a callous. The first time I heard it, I was wondering, what is this man saying? He's saying we got to destroy Iraq so nobody can attack us.
Well, you know what he's saying, Lee? He's saying it's a race war. That is a tacit admission that it's a race war.
Yeah.
At the highest levels of the federal government, not the federal government. Let's not honor them that way. At the highest levels of the Bush gang, a decision has been made that the lives of brown people, to the tune of thus far of 655,000 of them, the lives of brown people in Iraq are not of the same value as, let's face it, white people in America.
It don't matter as much. Don't matter as much.
Does that make the hair stand up on the back of your neck?
It's chilling. I mean, I'm African American. I was already told that in my country, the people of New Orleans don't matter as much as, say, the people of Sag Harbor.
Darn right.
Hey,
the people of New Orleans did not matter as much as the people inside a country club in Arizona. On the day that the levees broke, Lee.
Yeah.
And that just makes my blood feel like it's turned to ice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it freezes me to think that these people have created an America where we can make, not can make, where some people are making those kinds of value judgments and those kinds of determinations. You know, and the Republican Party wonders why it can't get the African American vote.
Oh boy, I'd just like to say one more thing. You know, things
sure.
are kind of looking up. The polls are looking pretty good, and some people may have a tendency to not think they need to go to the polls.
No, no.
not need to vote. You know, it's hard to vote, to stand out there if you're in a district where they're trying to suppress your vote and you're standing out there for 4 or 5 hours. I'll tell you how I vote. And I vote mean, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when I say I vote mean is when I don't feel like voting, I don't feel like getting up, standing out there. I think back to one thing. I think of a person that I really do not like. I think of the worst neocon, skinhead, whatever that I can think of. And I look at him and I say to myself, he's going to vote. He is going to vote. Now, how can I be real nasty? I can be real nasty by Xing out his vote. Just with my vote, I can guarantee that his vote doesn't count. I'm not saying this on a positive note. You know what? I think Martin Luther King would have felt good about Xing out, say, Pat Robertson's vote.
Sure. Or the Klan.
Absolutely. So it's not about my vote doesn't count. Your vote does count because you can zero out the butthole vote. Okay? Just that one person.
And feel doggone patriotic about doing it, too.
Absolutely. Even if you lose, you know that the person that a Pat Robertson vote didn't count, or this butthead that you sit in the office with vote didn't count. You screwed him, and heck with everything else, you know? That's how I look at it.
You know, I can't disagree with that. I mean, anything that motivates people to the polls, and, you know, they're... You know, share that with other people.
And I hope the head-on community would, if you have somebody who thinks, well, my vote doesn't count, just make it mean. Make it personal to them.
Yeah. Hey,
you don't like Bob over there. Why don't you X out his vote?
Exactly. Exactly.
Do that.
Lee, thank you very kindly.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
And onward to Michelle. Hey, Michelle, welcome to the program.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I absolutely love that. Zero the butthead vote. I'm going to make a sticker. Not a sticker. You know what I do? I go down to the sign shop, and I get the magnet, you know, the throw-on magnet material. And, like, last year, I'm out here in California. I'm a gal from Cal.
Okay.
Anyway, last year during Arnold's special deception, I had that on my truck, and then I had him, you know, it was like a no, and then Arnold, but in the middle it said no, you know, and just, you know, for
Arnold.
Yeah, Arnold. Anyway, it's like California. Anyway.
Cauliflower, California, I can't tell the difference.
I mean, it's so sick, it's humorous to think we've got such idiots. But, you know, when you were talking about Oregon, it made me think about what's going on out here in California. People just really don't realize the attack on the liberals out here in California. And the other day I was listening to this one guy that was talking on how we need to try to break this divide, you know, and we need to come to a middle ground with people. And you know, I have been doing that since 2000. I mean, within my own family, and I think I've talked on this before. The problem is you get to a point that you've just said things so many times that, Bob, I don't know if I've said it to you before or not.
That's okay. Say it anyway.
But, I mean, the whole thing within your family, you have division. And this guy's talking about, you know, how there's conservatives and liberals in the family and they don't talk. And it's like, yeah, I know, I experienced that. And, you know, it's just so sad that politics and religion divide even families. I mean, you know, I do say that sometimes a family picked is better than a family given.
Well, you know, that's like Gertrude Stein said, friends are the family you choose for yourself.
Right. Well, the gaggle that's in the chat room, I just absolutely love and enjoy.
Oh, what a wonderful crowd, huh?
Oh, my gosh. You know, you have a better crowd. I don't tell Tom. I told
Shh, you, it'll be our secret.
Yeah, but in your chat room. But maybe that's just because, you know, there's a little bit more strong-headed people, opinionated people like me and Tom's chat room. But, you know, I come here because I do. I get overwhelmed. So, you know, in trying to reach that middle ground with people, when people look at me and say, oh, there needs to be a flat tax. I had a man yesterday. I went to the mission down in Long Beach.
Yeah, flat tax for the flatheads, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And this man who I was who runs this, you know, their mission, where they sell all this stuff, he's telling me that he thinks there should be a flat tax. And I'm like, okay, let's take this down to the basics. Take a man that makes $100 a day and take a man that makes $1,000 a day. What kind of impact on that man that's making $100 a day if you gave him a 20% taxation to the man that makes $1,000? And then just keep raising it up.
Yeah.
And we see that it's so regressive. But this man was just like, well, you know, he just blew that off, you know.
Well, look, you know, they had a congressional hearing where this ugly little so-called libertarian, he's just a plain old hateful racist conservative named Neil Bortz, Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma invited him to testify before the Senate, I forget which committee it was, but, you know, Bortz was real thrilled. There's just some stuff out there. We live in a time, Michelle, where if you look at a politician and he's sponsoring it, you know damn good and well you better be against it. And Jim Inhofe is one of those people.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Because, I mean, he's crazier than a run-over dog. He just is.
You know, being from Missouri, I totally can visualize that one, but
I know.
No, it is. It's a sad state when it's sad that
we got families in America that can't sit down to Thanksgiving dinner now, thanks to the politics of the Bush administration
and the religious divide. I mean, I met reverends and preachers and earlier in my life that they came to the middle. That, you know, Michelle, it's okay to question that. That's why God gave you a brain.
Yeah, if you're not questioning, you're not believing.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. But not anymore. It's strictly a Jefferson, you know, all of the religious right is a Jefferson Starship song now. If only you'd believe like I believe, baby, we'd get by.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all it is. Unfortunately, Michelle, I got to roll.
Got to go.
We're out of time.
Yeah, see, time always goes fast when you're enjoying you all's company. Thank you so much,
Oh,
Bob.
Thank you.
And Agnes, too, and the people in the room.
She's still answering the phones, and it's 2 minutes till 10. Yeah.
Okay, love y'all.
Take care. Love you, too. Gang, if you're on hold, everybody, I apologize. I so sincerely apologize. Try back tomorrow night, and we will make this work. There is always time to talk on this program. Agnes produced tonight, and she did so marvelously. We're going to have to get her one of those little telemarketer telephone headsets because you guys kept her busy. Thank you. Brian Reznor announces John Fox is the engineer. Ben Birch maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasting at whiterosesociety.org. The part of the program that you may have missed tonight will be up as an archive. We'll make that happen because the conversation with David Lindorf was fabulous. Shelby LaPre at radiopower.org is our streaming partner and simulcasts a number of the programs of the Head On Radio Network. Programming note for you tomorrow night from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern. 2 to 4 Pacific. Dr. Bill O'Brien will be filling in for Bruce Birch. If you have not heard Dr. Bill, treat yourself. You will be glad you did. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. Susan and Gene are our news ninjas at the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com news blog. golly, we appreciate what they do. Thanks to all the moderators. You guys in the chat room are just a blast, all of y'all. And every program on the horn happens because there are several thousand dedicated members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They get up every day and they go and they build the American dream. And by supporting this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, featuring the best of Mike Malloy.
When you're swallowing all life's
Seekers, Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. If you're listening on the internet, on the IE America Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Channel 145, White Rose Society, Radio Power Org, blah, 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 blah. Boy, didn't Al Franken hand Bill O'Reilly his ass over the weekend, huh? Wasn't that fun? Now that the FCC has made its decision, please pick up your remote controls, ladies and gentlemen, and turn to Fox. You like what you see? Too bad. The program tonight produced by Catherine Bay, Robin Bittman announces for us, as always.